Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make one hell of a noise. It's episode 143, and I'm Vince Hunt, who seems quite G'd up, but I'm blaming it on the cider that I'm drinking, and I'm the creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And joining me this week, the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The pickled gherkin in everyone's Big Mac, Tony Esmond.
Oh, back to the beetroot.
It's always some sort of like root vegetable with you, but we'll get onto that later. And This week we're also joined by the man behind the fantastic Leamington Comic Con. It's Mr. Dan Mallier.
Hi guys, you alright?
You're right, Dan.
Yes.
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah. Good. Yes. Not too bad.
We've been fighting the good fight and trying to deal with technology, but this week
now.
Yeah.
Yes, we were scheduled to talk to one of the guests at Leamington Comic Con and a podcast favourite, Mr. John Wagner. But technology first. But we will be talking. We'll be trying to talk to him again soon. So don't worry about that.
I lied. Really, I didn't really have him lined up. I just used it an excuse to get on the pod.
All those fake phone calls. You were going, John. No, press this. That's that's just your wife or something, isn't it? Yeah.
She sounds just like that.
That's
affects a Scottish accent.
Back to roleplay, back to sexy cat burglar. John Wagner roleplay in the bedroom can't be bad.
Oh my god.
Well, at least it's got a deeper voice than John, to be fair.
Oh my god.
She's got a bit of punch.
I'll tell you what, we're going to have to interview her when we're at Leamington ourselves.
I think we ought to do a little special on the wives of people involved in comics as well. Yeah. I know she's involved herself.
Not necessarily the wives, the significant others of people in comics. Yeah.
The first ladies
of Comic Con would be good.
Yeah, that would be good, yeah. Might get a whole new audience for that one.
I doubt it.
Yeah, we might get in trouble. That's what we'll get.
Oh, no, not again.
You know what? It's never any trouble, though.
Oh, is it Comic House?
It is indeed Comic House. You can see it coming. I need to work on my game. Not like that, Tony. Grow up. But ComicHouse.com are our very own sponsors and good friends of the show. And we're going to be talking about Leamington Comic Con, and obviously we want you to try and get out to convention wherever you can. If you can't make it to a convention and you desperately need to get your fix of independent comics, then surely Comic House is the place to go. I know we read a lot on it, and one of the titles we were talk about this week is on there, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
And if you go to ComicHouse.com, there's a huge library of comics that, like, you can actually order hard copies. Most of the money goes to the creators as well, so they figured out a good system for that. So you can order printed copies. And that's amazing because the range is huge and they're always updating it. If you like to read your book digitally, then there's even more on the app. Now, Dan, what have we got at the moment on there?
I haven't got an email from Comic House telling me what's on there.
No, I think it's because of Easter. There's not that many new things on there, is there?
Don't blame Easter.
Like I said, this week's guest and the title that's we was going to talk about is all on there, all six issues. I've been blasting through it. I'm only 5.5 issues through.
I read it this week as well.
Are we going to talk about this on the show?
We were going to talk about Rock of the Reds this week. And the way I've been reading it is on Comic House on the app, because all six issues is on there, and it's a fantastic book.
So that is a class start to finish, great story, and it is. I can't ruin it because you guys haven't quite finished it, but it's the best ending as well.
Yeah,
I fucking loved it.
Yeah. And there's so many cool indie titles on there as well, like Transylvanian Nights. That's on my to read list. I can't wait to get
that's a second. Great one. Yeah, you like that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of IDW going up and Dynamite at the moment. So there's tons on the app. So if you sign
up, I'd look at Terminal Hero today. That's a really interesting looking one as well.
Oh, what's that about?
It's a Dynamite one. It's a sort of thriller thing. Pete Milligan's written it. I'm a big fan of Pete Milligan, and Jay Lee's done the covers.
Nice one.
Yeah, really interesting.
Is it later, Jay Lee? Is it like?
It's only on the cover. They're very, they're not abstract, but they're sort of stylishly done Lee stuff. Yeah, a little bit later. The actual artist is Peter Kowalski, who does the interiors. But yeah, really nice.
Oh, nice.
Really sort of Milligan writes great comics, isn't he? Yeah.
So if any of you lovely listeners out there want to check it out, there is a 14-day free trial that you can sign up for. Now, monthly, it's only £3 a month, which is the price of probably a print comic from your local comic book shop that You know,
commonly known as F all, isn't it? In money regards. You know.
It kind of feels like a crime to only pay £3 for it.
Yeah, it does.
Because you get access to all of the comics on the Comic House library, and there's so many great ones on there. We've got a few titles on there. It's going to be even more. And the thing is, the creators are getting the money as well, because the more people reading it, the more payouts that the creators will get. So everything's going towards the people who are putting the books on there. So if you haven't got it yet, give it a try. Go to comichouse.com, find out more, and sign up. So there you go.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Well said.
Thank you. That is the first time, I think, in 143 episodes anyone said that to me.
Oh, I'm quite touched.
You put so much effort in, Vince.
Yeah.
It?
Yeah, you do. We're proud of you.
What do you want?
I said that to a bloke at work once. He said, no, he showed me how to work something on a computer, interesting enough. And I went, oh, I'm proud of you.
You showed John what to do then.
Yeah. And he showed me it, and I said, oh, I'm proud of you. And he goes, are you really proud of me? That's a little shout out to Johnny T's mate, because it was him.
Oh, Johnny T's mate. Nice. Yeah. We're big fans of him on the show.
Yeah.
Does he listen, Tony?
He does.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
He does. Yeah. He was dressed up as sort of role play sexy Daredevil this week. You sent me a picture.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. is he the man without fear? Is he truly the man without fear?
He's man without a lot of things, right. Mostly clothes.
Oh, the man without clothes. speaking of Daredevil, you know he's called the man without fear? Where did that name originate from?
Is it from the actual name, Daredevil?
Is it just that?
I don't know, because sure he always seems a bit full of anxiety and worries, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Not exactly fear,
yeah,
but he's always a bit worried about things, isn't he? He's always got things going on.
And it's not like he is the man without fear, because
he might have slapped it on top of the comic, and then...
Yeah. Oh, why have you got to bring us down with your reality?
Is it a bit like the Fantastic Four, the world's greatest comic magazine, or whatever it says on that as well?
Yeah, but...
It's like that sort of
thing. I mean...
That's quite a claim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that kind of was back in the day, though, wasn't it? And hopefully it will be again they're back.
Yeah. With Dan Slott.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Is he stopped Spider-Man now?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
What was the issue with that? That they weren't going to do it while Fox had the rights for the film?
There was a sort of conspiracy theories around that side of things, weren't there?
Well, killed off the X, well, kind of put the X-Men and Fantastic Four on the back burners because they didn't want to give.
Well, I think
Fox,
the X-Men continued comic-wise, but they stopped, like, is it toys and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the Fantastic Four just completely...
Yeah.
I mean, the
X-Men were essentially pushed more to... They were essentially pushed more to an island, weren't they? They were pushed out of the way
while Marvel
tried...
But they were still pumping out issues.
Yeah, they were trying to push the Inhumans, which, you know... I mean, I think, in the overall scheme of things, I mean, good comics or no... I think the Inhumans push was a bit of a failed project, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
They were trying to.
But Donny Cates now writing the death of the Inhumans, isn't he? I don't know what meaning that has.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that should be quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what happens, as long as if we get good books out of it, that's all that matters.
Yes, yeah. I read some cracking Marvel books this week. Yeah, I've had a good comic reading weekend.
Dan Malia. Do I have to say Dan Malia every time? Right. I'm just going to call you Butcher this week, Dan.
Oh, but Guns.
Okay. Oh, Guns. No, let's call him Guns.
There you go.
Okay.
That works.
Yeah. So Dan, obviously you put on a Comic-Con every year.
Yep.
But so obviously you're a bit of a comics fan, but what is your comics reading habits? I mean, how much time do you get to read comics?
Not as much as I'd like. It's difficult because it's just trying to find when you've got a 4-year-old screaming the house down, you're working and trying to run a Comic Con and set it all up. It's difficult to find time, but it's kind of quite. I end up kind of doing more reading generally when I'm away than I do at home these days, just because of the time.
Yeah.
Does
that mean you have to really pick and choose the titles that you're reading when you get a chance?
Yeah, definitely. And normally I'm not a big fan of reading kind of, you know, weekly or fortnightly, monthly comic issues. I'd rather just get the trade and then I've got everything. And then if I've got an hour, I can do an hour. Or if I've got a couple of hours, I may finish it. You know, it's that kind of thing. So I kind of generally I can go a few weeks without reading anything, and then I'll blitz through a number of trades and then have a few more weeks where I don't read anything. And it's kind of, I don't have a consistent approach to it. I just kind of read as and when I can.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm generally in bed.
Yeah. Oh, my word.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Any excuse not to perform.
Yeah, I mean, some weeks, like this past week, we were saying before the show that I read quite a few titles this week, certainly more than I would on a normal weekly basis. But there are some weeks where, I don't know, you're working full time, and on top of it, you know, you're doing comics artwork, you're making comics yourself.
Yeah.
So that chews into your comics reading time. So, you know, sometimes it is a bit of a struggle finding that time to read comics. Yeah. If you don't have, I think if I had a transit journey, if I was catching the train or the bus,
yeah, that's,
you know,
my big thing, because I can read. Yeah. I read every day, because I've got that hour every day to read. Yeah.
Is that where you get most of your reading done?
Yeah, or in coffee shops waiting, because my work involves me waiting about for meetings, waiting about to see people and stuff like that, and sitting about. And I always get, I'm a great believer in getting somewhere early, as anyone who's ever met me knows. Yeah. And I'm always early and always read a comic or do a bit of writing. So it's sort of, yeah. I've tell you what I have started doing, because I'm now like this digital convert. I'm sorry about this, Dan, because I know you own a comic business. Because I'm a little bit of a digital convert. I bought one of those cheap Kindle Fires. You bought one as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I've got one.
And unlike having a sort of an expensive iPad that you have to pull out and read on the train, I can literally put that in my sort of suit jacket. It literally fits in there, and I can pull it out and read it anytime. It's quite, and I'm not too worried, because it only costs like 30 quid or something.
That expensive at all, really.
Is it a decent enough size to read a full page comic?
No, I read Guided View.
I read Guided View. But sometimes, if I get sent a PDF and I put it on the Kindle, the Kindle's a decent enough screen that I can still read full page. With a phone, for instance, sometimes I read, if I'm on the go and if I'm on the bus or something, I'm reading a comic on the phone, that will always be Guided View, but I could never read a full page with that.
No, exactly. I actually find those Kindle Fires a little bit small for a full page.
Yeah.
I think, But for example, I'll go to Orbital every week and pick my stack of comics up, and then I will always have a coffee. Because generally, this week, I had a coffee with a guest of ours who'll be on the show in a second.
Yes.
And I was a bit early waiting for it, so I read five of the sort of 15 comics I picked up this week, you know, and I always read 2000 AD. I don't know what it is. I always like to read 2000 AD. It's very rarely I'll read it at home. It's always, because it's 5-page stories, it's easy to sort of read on the platform while you're waiting for a train. Yeah. It's, you know, that sort of thing. That's what I kind of like about it. And it's for about the last year, I've been loving 2000 AD. It's been right back top of the pile for me now. So that's a quick guess. One I always read almost first, I think, every week.
Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
I found I ended up going kind of, I used Comixology for a few years, just probably go back probably 5-10 years or so.
Yeah.
And then I just stopped using it and then just went back to buying trades.
Yeah.
And, you know, Guided View's great. And I agree that, you know, if you're on a flight or a train or something, you don't want to carry a stack of trades around with you. It's easy. But I prefer having the physical paper, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I've kind of gone back to that now. So although I use, like I said, Comic House on my phone and things like that, I kind of generally prefer the paper.
It's the price on Comixology at the moment. And again, there's another few. I picked up a lot, £5 worth of, which is about 4,000 pages, I think.
That's brilliant.
Cost me that, you know, this week. And you think, so that was good for me this week. But
I've got more, I kind of buy more trades than I can actually read through. So my trade pile just keeps getting bigger and bigger. But then going back to having limited time, I don't read the bloody things. Yeah. I've got some trades I've had for about 18 months. I've not even started reading them yet. And I just keep putting more and more on the pile.
Welcome to my world. I'm still waiting to read the Aryan Lord of Atlantis from 1984.
I saw an advert on Facebook today, one of the comic book groups, and someone was selling a digital version of a 40-page comic for, it was either 25 quid or $25.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, fucking hell. I tried to screenshot it, but I fucked it up because I was going to send it on, because I thought, what the bloody hell's in this for $25? And it was, that's a lot.
That's not right.
Hell of a lot.
Oh, dear. Yeah, but my it's like every week into the comic shop, bag full of comics, read as many as I can, you know, on the way home or that weekend. And but there's always those hangers on that you think, oh, I'll put that aside and read that in one go when I get to it, you know.
Yeah,
it's always those hangers on, aren't they, you know? And it, I get a bit, I feel a bit guilty sometimes. I see them and think, oh, I need to read that, you know.
I was doing that with the last bit of Invincible. I saved up the last 10 issues and kind of did it in one evening, just blasted away from them, because I wanted that. I didn't want to be drip fed it over like months and months. I wanted it all in one go.
Yeah. So, what are you going to replace on your pull list with that, dude? Have you decided?
I don't know. No, I haven't decided. I'm still getting Extremis. Is Extremis Extreme by that guy who did, he was on the show, Danny Warren Johnson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's great.
Is it Extremity? No.
Extremity. Yeah.
Still getting that.
That's great. You got Savage Dragon, mate. Yeah, I'll tell you what.
I should get back on that.
Yeah.
I should get back.
Brilliant at the moment. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
I think I've got like the mini series and the first 20 or 30 in comic book form.
So you've got plenty to read then.
Yeah.
He's top of his game, mate. I put that as one of the best comics out there at the moment, genuinely.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's tackling issues. It's so well drawn.
But we will say this, it's filth.
And it's absolute filth.
Absolute filth.
I do occasionally send you little screen captures, don't
that
I?
One... You sent us a couple of weeks back. I was generally like taken aback by that. I was Jesus Christ.
Is that the one she gets thrown across the room on the sperm fountain?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all done that, haven't we? Do you know what I mean? So.
Yeah. It's tackling those kind of issues, everyday issues.
I think the bigger question is, how far did it throw you, Tony?
Yeah. Well, it threw me, mentally quite a long way. You know?
He's still working his way back. but anyway, as Tony said there, he went to Orbital, he got his comics, he popped into a cafe, and he wasn't alone. Were you, Tony?
No, I wasn't. I was joined by someone. Yes.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that? Because we've got a bit of audio for you lovely people.
Yeah, I did about, I think it's about 15 minutes in all. But I met with Farhan Qureshi, who is the creator and writer of Digitopia, which both you and I, Dan, have spoken about.
Yeah.
It's cleverly a comic that hasn't, and I'm going to talk about another one of these later, but it's cleverly a comic that hasn't hit Kickstarter yet. They're a long way into the creation of it. So it's illustrated by Sebastian Pires, colour and arts by Simon Robbins, who's, I know, he's a big listener. He's a good lad, Simon, and editor Luke Robbins. And it's they're basically creating it, distributing previews of it, getting the buzz going before, when they press go on Kickstarter, they know they've already got that following, which is a very wise way of doing it, I think.
Yeah.
Now, Farhan is self-confessed, doesn't have like a deep history of comic reading himself. But during the interview, you'll hear him say, he basically says the bug, he's been caught. He says he saw it as a good thing to do, for perhaps to develop a film from or something like that. But now he says it's got him. He says he loves it so much. He's like devouring trades. I said, oh, what are you reading at the moment? And he pulled like a couple of trades out of his bag. I said, oh, I'm onto these now. He says, I found a cafe in Croydon that's got a big pile of comics. I'll just go in there and read comics. You know, it's like, so I think we've managed to sort of brainwash another person as well.
Yay.
Yeah, we've got another one of us again, you know. And he's now like, he's loving the creative process of it. And he was showing me some of the conversations he has on Slack, which I think is a sort of WhatsApp type program. Do you guys use that?
No.
Yeah. He's on something called Slack. And it's sort of swapping ideas, talking to the creators. Yeah, it's an interesting interview. And he's clearly a very switched on business guy, because he comes from the film world and the video game world sort of thing.
Yeah.
And has been involved in some cracking movies, you know, the Harry Potter movies, all this sort of thing.
Wow, okay,
nice.
And now he's found a sort of love for comics, which is quite nice to hear. And he takes us through a bit from the inception through to how he's getting on and what he intends to do in the future with it. Yeah, really nice guy. I'm really impressed with him, actually. Yeah, and he's a switched on guy. Yeah.
There you go. So here's a little bit of audio of Tony in the Wild.
Yeah.
For your listening pleasure.
Okay, I'm here with Farhan Qureshi, who is writer, creator of a book we talked about recently, and myself and Dan have both talked about it, Digitopia, which is in the process of being created, and I think you've distributed the, is it the first 10 pages, is it?
Yeah, thanks for interviewing me on the show. Absolutely, yes. Yeah, so we have put together the first 10 pages of Digitopia, and hopefully it'll go on to be a full graphic novel in the upcoming several months, no doubt.
You're doing the wise thing, aren't you? Because you're getting the buzz for it before you put it on Kickstarter. Is that kind of the idea, is it?
Yeah, so I'm trying to... the team and I... hi, Simon. Hi, Seb. The team and I are putting it together with a view to, like, launch a Kickstarter in the middle of April. And rather than try to just go into Kickstarter and then tell people about it, we're kind of showing that, you know, as a team, we can actually deliver something. So this is a sample of our work, which we're putting out there for everyone to enjoy.
That's very wise, dude. I've got to tell you, yeah. You see a lot of people who launch Kickstarters and then suddenly they have to think, oh, my God, now I've got to start pimping it, don't they? You know. Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit about Digitopia. I've read the preview. Not everyone who's listening to will have read it. But it's the preview's free to read online as well, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had this idea. Actually, I wrote the original in 2012, which is about the same time I became a dad. So things are taking a bit of a while, but... I kind of grew up watching Mad Max movies in the 80s, and I was way, way too young to be watching this kind of stuff. So Digitopia is kind of like a Mad Max meets the Matrix style adventure. It's really high octane, but I've tried to weave in a lot of the themes that perhaps as a society we're facing today, and how we're dealing with that. Things like... governments, media manipulation, and it's all about a father trying to get his daughter to safety.
That's something we noticed, because it is science fiction, it's dystopian science fiction, but there's that thread of family through it, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, I always find the most interesting stories are the most primal ones. So whilst it's really interesting to talk about how governments and media behave, actually I'm going for the story of just something that most people can relate to, trying to get your child to safety. And Digitopia is set in this dystopian future where nothing is quite as it seems. And there's bombs going off, there's terrorists everywhere, there's armies invading. And it's really just trying to get your child to safety. What would you do in those situations where you don't know who to trust, where you don't know where to go? So it's almost... everything is against you, but ultimately to succeed, to accomplish what you need, you've got to find a way, and you've got to kind of trust the lesser of two evils, as it were. Yeah.
So now you've got a bit of an international crowd of creators, haven't you? I know, because I think Simon Robbins, who's your colorist letterer, is that right? Yes. He got in contact with us first off and told us about it, but you sort of gathered some people. So do you want to talk about who else is involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously I'm the writer of it and full-time project manager, web developer. So I'm here in London. Simon's is a colorist, letterer, and he's kind of art directing it with me. He's in Melbourne, and our very, very talented artist, inker Sebastian. He is from Buenos Aires.
Sebastian Pires?
Correct. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So Sebastian's... we have some awkwardly timed calls. It's either very, very early in the morning for one of us or very, very late at night.
Right. How did you find the guys to do it?
Yeah, so I actually started this journey, and I'm fairly new to comics. My background is as a screenwriter, filmmaker, CGI artist, so... I'm learning all the time, and one of the things I've learned through all of this is always surround yourself with a team who's better than you, and preferably a team who knows what they're doing. So what I did was, about 7 or 8 months ago, I wrote... all of this has happened in the last 7 or 8 months. I put a blog post together saying, I want to create a comic book. I'm not a comic book writer or publisher. And I need the following people, from best of my understanding. Then I put that blog post out there, and I put it on places like... I put it on all the social media. The two that returned the most qualified traffic for me was Reddit and Facebook. Okay. So Reddit has a really strong... And it's not just the numbers. It's actually people who are willing to help you. And through Reddit, people advised me what I needed to do, what the team I needed to make was. Before doing that, I only knew one person who worked actively in comics. He gave me a lot of guidance. So through this blog post, I had a form on there for people to leave their links to their portfolios, etc. And I got 22 people reply to me. Yeah. And I was trying to figure out, what's the difference between an inker and a penciler? What's it, do you know what I mean? Did several interviews, mostly via Skype. Many, many Google Docs later, I whittled it down to the last few. And, I spoke to Seb. I really liked his art. I could tell straight away. Yeah, I wanted to work with him. He agreed. And then with Simon, it was... there weren't as many inkers and colorists as there were artists. But all the inkers, all the colorists and letterists, so willing to go that extra mile for the project. And I really saw with Simon that this is a guy who really wants this almost as bad as I want it. And I could tell that from our correspondences. And when we met on Skype, absolutely. I mean, I'm so, so pleased that out of all the talented people I actually met, that I'm working with Simon and Seb, because as much as it's my project, it's their project, and they've heavily contributed. I wouldn't say contribute, I'd say I was speaking to someone about this. They say a script is essentially just a long letter to an artist and colorist, and they've really taken it and they've made it their own, and far, far beyond what I could have imagined. You've seen the digital preview, so I mean...
It's gorgeous, yeah. And the designs are really strong as well. So did you spend a lot of time working up designs for it? Or?
Absolutely, yeah. So I really entered into this as a collaboration. So working with Simon, not just you colour this, you ink this. Guys, I want your ideas. I know you're good at what you do. There's no... I don't need to even speak about that. As well as your... holding pens and doing Photoshop and Illustrator, I want your ideas. So I had an art style guide that I'd written from before. Then Simon and I went through that art style guide and really, really refined it. So everything that you see in the writing is reflected in the colours.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So it's not just make it look like this comic. We actually go through the tone of it. And you've probably seen... in the digital preview, the first 8 pages are different to pages 9 and 10 because we absolutely shift the palette from really red hot abrasive environment to very cold steel environment when we actually enter into Digitopia. So that is all, as much as I'd like to take the credit, it's really Simon. Yeah.
So you're conveying mood and you're conveying tone through colour and art, obviously, but as well as the writing.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's kind of how our collaboration's been working. The three of us probably spent quite a lot of time, probably most of the time actually on Slack actually discussing it, and not as much time actually, because the thing is, I think if you do the work up front and actually have these long discussions and really understand each other, it just, the pages essentially draw and colour themselves from that point. Yeah.
If only. That's us writers, I saying that, isn't it?
Well, exactly. I have no idea what they do when I'm offline.
So what's the plans beyond this? So you're obviously going to kickstart next month sometime. What are you looking to do? Have you got any plans around release? Where are you going to release it? What the sort of publicity plan is going to be beyond that?
Absolutely. So given it's my first comic book, Kickstarter, I actually joined an online comics course called Comics Launch. With Tyler James, and I've joined the mastermind session, so I'm working with lots of other comic creators.
Okay.
And one of the things about Kickstarter is I had this big plan to finish issue one, print it, distribute it. The funding target for that was so high to do all of that work. So having spoken with the group, I kind of come to the conclusion that Kickstarter is a game where you decide the difficulty level. So if you want it to, if you really want to go for that and you want to make it that difficult, you will spend your time just working social media and working distribution channels and talking to printers. So what we've decided to do is for this Kickstarter is to go all digital. Okay. So it'll be all digital rewards. And we've really been inspired by the work of Ryan K. Lindsay, who I think...
Top bloke.
So Simon knows him. I spoke to him on Twitter. Really, really nice guy. I've heard him on your podcast and other podcasts. And Ryan does something that has really been inspirational to us, and that is he focuses on digital. because that allows him to focus on writing. And okay. when I think about the upcoming months post-Kickstarter, I kind of see one option, me being a fulfillment service and parcel delivery service, or the other option, carry on writing the story.
Okay.
So that's why we've chosen to go all digital. So we can, essentially, Digitopia will be 4 issues, 24 pages or thereabouts each.
Yeah.
And really, when this is the first Kickstarter, hopefully there'll be a second, third, and fourth, or maybe we'll hit our stretch goals, which will be pretty amazing. And then after the whole digital, after the whole story is written and we have the PDFs, then maybe one Kickstarter just for a graphic novel print. So, but mind you, subject plan's always subject to change, right?
I think people do want to double dip on things. You know, people do like the digital copy, and if they like it enough, they will buy the hard copy. I don't think that's in doubt at all, I don't think, you know?
Yeah. I mean, also, whilst we make the digital copies, they'll be published on the website. So there'll always be a webcomic. And I'm a big believer in, yes, we have to make a sustainable living out of it, because we have to live, otherwise we'll go up and do day jobs. But, well, absolutely, yeah. Day job takes enough time as it is. But I do want it to be free for everyone, and that's where the webcomic comes in. So people can always go onto the website and browse it. Obviously, to make that happen, we need to do the Kickstarter. So one of the things I'm trying to really hold on to on this project, which I've perhaps been guilty of in previous ones, is I want to make sure the artists get paid a fair day rate. Because I really feel like when we look around us, everyone else is getting paid, but why are artists not being given a value? So that's why... you know, the Kickstarter will help me raise the money so I can pay both Seb and Simon the correct the correct page rate. So then they can make it to sustainable art for themselves.
Yeah. So you look in, what's the sort of schedule-wise? Will you have all four out this year or in a year? What's the sort of plan? One a quarter? Or?
So the plan is to launch the first Kickstarter. Hopefully we'll hit the funding target. There's stretch goals in this Kickstarter. So if we... really well, we may even fund the first 2 issues in this one Kickstarter. If we hit our target and then overhit but don't reach stretch goal one, well, the money that we collect will go to X amount of pages of issue two. So whilst I send out all the digital rewards to everyone, the team can carry on making pages 25, 26, 27, which will be as a webcomic, and then when I go for the next Kickstarter, it won't be... I'm not going to aim for funding for 24 pages. It'll be 24 minus however many pages.
The chances it'll be cheaper as we go along.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping. So I've tried to set the difficulty level on my first Kickstarter to moderate, hoping that I'll overhit and the extra funds we can start pushing out the first several pages of issue two. Then the next Kickstarter will be fund the remainder of issue two. Of course, there will be stretch goals associated with that. So to answer your question, ideally, I would like to think by the end of 2018. Okay. And this is where I might regret it, because it's now...
Yeah. I know the feeling.
Yeah. But I'm hoping by the end of 2018, if we could get the... If I'm speaking to you in December 2018 and I'm saying we're doing a Kickstarter for a print version of Digitopia graphic novel, that would absolutely be... you know, the ideal situation to be in.
So is this, have you caught the bug now? Because you're not a huge comic guy, are you? But have you caught the bug now? Will you be doing more, do you think? Or have you found the process quite an easy process compared to script writing, I suppose?
Well, yeah, compared to filmmaking and animation. you know, it's funny because I feel like, you know, the person who comes to the island to loot it, and then you get on the island and you end up falling in love with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what I come to it is... you know, in a way, I've always wanted to make Digitopia the movie. And when I started this process about 18 months ago, 20 months ago, my initial idea was, if I want to make the movie, knowing that most movies are made from comic books, if I can get my comic book onto Amazon and outsell popular comic books of today, then I've got a really good chance to make my movie. Then having said that, that was the intention as I set off on the voyage. Having come here, I'm just kind of like completely intoxicated with comic books now. And I think it's perhaps, you know, when you're a kid, you're told not to read comic books and you need to study. And fortunately or unfortunately or wisely or unwisely, I kind of took that advice and spent a lot of time reading textbooks that I didn't really, I doubt anyone enjoys it, but kind of thinking, okay, well, this is how it's meant to be. Now, well, I say as a grown-up, as a pseudo-grown-up, I can actually do things that I want to do. And I really wish back when I was growing up that, and it, for kids growing up today, it is a really viable thing to do.
I think so, the thing is as well, you've written something, and then in a couple of months, you've started seeing it transformed into art, which is very unlike a movie, which would take quite a lot longer, I presume. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, when I've written movies, I mean, you may be lucky and see it translate into storyboards. Which is really satisfying. It's not on the same degree as getting a layout or an inked page and seeing the colours and letters. That's something I put on the blog below each page of the webcomic. If you scroll down, it's a little blog post, and I, so far, and I hope to continue to do this, I put the original script, I put a blocking, and I put then the inks, and obviously the colours and letters are at the top of the page, because you've got to consider page load times, all of these things. But yeah, just seeing that whole process, and it's not just seeing it happen, it's seeing what the other people bring to it. So and the reason I put all three elements is together so you can see what the original story was, but how it changed. So you may see the layout is, you'll think, is Farhan accidentally copied and pasted the wrong page of story? It's more about seeing people really bring it to life rather than, you know, I've spoken to a few creators, one of the worst experiences as a writer is when you see the page turn out exactly how you wrote it. Because you want other people to contribute ideas to it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's good that we've got you on our side. You're one of us now. Yes. We've pulled you over here.
I was always there, probably via proxy, I imagine.
So where can people find the blog, and where can people look at Digitopia, and where can people find you online?
Yeah, so on Twitter, I'm at FahanQ underscore UK, I think. Okay, I'm pretty sure I am. On the website, the website is comic.digitopiafilm.com. And there's a link at the top where I can provide you the link where you can download your free PDF. Yep. And that includes all the artwork, includes the backstories, includes making offs. And there's also a pop-up form on every page. So I do apologize for the pop-up window that may come your way on your first visit.
We're used to that, I think.
Yeah.
That's brilliant, and we loved it. We genuinely, I want to see how this goes, so it's nice to be in at the ground floor. So thanks a lot, man, really kind of you.
Thanks a lot, and you're the first people I interviewed with on the podcast, so you got the scoop.
And there you go, that's definitely a creator we'll be hearing more from in the future.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it turns out. Yeah. Really, really. And I like the idea of the physical copy, you know, maybe towards the end of the year, next year sometime. Yeah, I certainly suggested a couple of conventions as a good place to release it, depending when it's finished to him. Yeah.
And I know, certainly the convention scene, as soon as you step into it, that's it then. You're done then, isn't it? Your goose is cooked. Yeah. You're in it for life.
Dave Cook, who did...
Kiltopia.
Kiltopia. He wrote a great article this week about promoting your Kickstarter.
Oh, I've saved that to read. Yeah.
Should be like he said, pretty much, you shouldn't be building up your fan base when you're doing the Kickstarter. That should be done and dusted beforehand. I think some people make that mistake. They don't have a fan base and they don't have a product, and they're just saying, I'm going to make this, and wonder why not too many people are kind of getting behind it. We have to put it in the show notes. It's a fantastic article and great point is in there.
Yeah, it's similar to if you're going to do an anthology, have a podcast for 2.5-3 years before you release it. You know, similar.
The long game.
Yeah.
The long con.
It's bang on though, because it's like even with the con now, even with, you know, we're struggling to reach people. So if, you know, and we've not been great at capturing, you know, we haven't got a mailing list that's got thousands and thousands of people on it. And in hindsight, that's really, you know, it's not good, because you're just not reaching anybody now with Facebook and things like that. And now we've shot ourselves in the foot by by not utilizing, you know, all of the previous shows to capture email addresses. So actually, okay, you can hit people with mailing lists and, you know, blogs and bits and pieces like that, that you just, you know, in hindsight, I'm thinking we really should have been hotter on that. It's right.
Yeah, I know, because I was speaking to Stuart. It's funny you should mention that. I was speaking to Stuart Moore, about True Believers, because he's got the Troops mailer now. Is that something you'd consider, Dan, or...?
Yeah, so I think we've got a mailing list that we use, but you know, we've done three shows coming up to the fourth, and we've got 600 people on it, which is pretty shite.
Right.
You know, we should have done a lot more. So, you know, if you think if you're gonna, you know, email 600 people and you'll probably only get 10-12% of people will be interested in it, you know, you do the maths on 600, that's not a lot of people that are engaging with it, is it? You know, it's kind of, we should have had thousands, and we've just, you know, it's not, well, I say just haven't been, we should have done it, and that's going to hinder us in the future, I believe.
Okay.
It's that whole kind of thing of being a marketeer as well, for whatever, like, that you got the Comic Con, we've got comic, obviously, and like, it's another hat you got to kind of put on and be an expert in that as well as all the other stuff. Mm. It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
I can't blame you for making mistakes. Yeah.
No, it's time, but it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, no, I guess we were all probably a bit naive with what's happened with the kind of social media algorithms and stuff, that you're thinking, oh, they'll give you a free platform. Great. We'll keep shouting at people. And then not many people thought, well, actually at some point they're going to pull the rug from under your feet and, try and monetize it, so if you don't pay, you don't reach anybody, you know, that's kind of where it is. So no, I certainly see that as a big mistake that we've made. But to go back to the point, you know, with the Killtopia thing, it's bang on. You build your base first and then you sell to your base of people, not try and do it, you know, as an afterthought, because it just, you know, you won't hit anyone, which is why I think last time I checked, he'd done about 12 grand or something on the Killtopia. I don't know what it finished at, but it was silly.
Yeah,
I think this, maybe it's a bit controversial point, but when Marvel did the thing of like introducing the new characters, rather than go for the audience that they had, they went for an audience that they didn't have, and that might have kind of shot them in the foot. I'm not too sure about kind of sales wise, so this is only kind of speculative, but you should go for the audience you have rather than.
But I think there's a middle ground to that, because obviously that's well and good for the audience that are already buying the comics, but you need to hit that market that aren't necessarily buying the comics, or the people that read, you know, watching the films or whatever. So I mean, yes, I think it's a mistake to only sort of market to new people who don't necessarily read comics, but it can also be a mistake to be too insular. And you know, if you don't understand this, then you'll never be able to, you know, that's, I mean, we're always seeing number ones from Marvel all the time, and it is a sticking point for a lot of people.
I think people see it now as a jumping off point rather than a jumping on point.
Yeah,
that's the sad thing about it, I think.
Yeah,
you know, and oh Christ, another restart.
Yeah,
you know.
But they've gone back to the legacy numbering, haven't they?
But they're restarting a lot of comics again, aren't they?
But
they're going back on it again now.
Really?
Oh, so they're actually going back?
Not on everything.
Oh, right.
Not on everything, yeah. Yeah, that's like a new Avengers title coming.
Yeah, it's just going to get confusing, isn't it?
You know, I don't read a lot of kind of Marvel and like DC stuff, to be honest, but what's this obsession with the kind of rebooting or restarting? It's like, you know, why not just create new story arcs that you don't have to start from the beginning every time, do you? I don't get it. It's like, if you're going to jump into a soap, you don't have to go back to 1983 with EastEnders to start from the very beginning to pick
good
it
knowledge,
up.
Sir, good knowledge.
Was it essentially like
that? Was a guess. I went with my gut on that.
You the number one used to always, the first issue of comic always would like, it'd be the jumping on point, so it'd be high sales, wouldn't it? And people were like, oh, is it going to be worth something? So you'd get people that buy the issue one.
Yeah.
But I think what the thing is, you keep on releasing issue ones every couple of years of the same title. Mm. After what, it's kind of like you're in the short term, you're gaining, but in the long term, you're shooting yourself in the foot.
We're
in
living
the notebook, I write them in. It's really confusing me now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I write them all down.
We're living in a world of short-term gains, I think. I think that's the truth of it, because... It's also a world of diminishing returns. the number ones will always have the big numbers, and then there's usually a steady drop to the point of, well, we might as well restart this again, because they know they're guaranteed 1 month of decent numbers. If you look at it purely...
It's very sort of term view, isn't it?
Yeah. You know? I mean, if you look at it, like, if you take the comic lovers out, you know, and how we feel about it emotionally, and you look at it business-wise, if you look at numbers, you could probably argue more for why they do it. I know that's controversial and I don't necessarily agree with it, but if you look at the numbers, you can see why they're doing it. But when it comes to the creative content, when it comes to the stories and the characters, that's, you know, and I'm a person that just thinks more about the stories and the characters themselves, so I'm, you know, I get tired of the content.
And ultimately, that is in the long term the better, for me, the better sales pattern, because you play that long game, you've got people forever. You play that short game, you're getting good sales here and there, but it'll disappear.
Yeah, that's eventually. What I mean. Like, you'll be able to play that card a couple of times, and afterwards, people are like, oh, just ain't, I ain't fucking doing this anymore.
I think I think they need to make more of a sense, you know, more of a big deal out of a new arc starting rather than a new title. When I loved it, you know, obviously the 90s, that was almost my peak, you know, I was just buying everything, if you know what I mean, and it wasn't that good. But you always had the banner at the top, you know, saying, you know, part one of 12, you know, over the Spider-Man titles, or they make made a big deal out of this is part one of a story. And I see it occasionally with a few Marvel titles. I think there's is it Damnation? That's going on at the moment.
Yeah, that's actually quite a good one. And the Avengers have got this sort of ongoing. It's like the little triangle you used to get on the Superman comics. Remember that used to be used to tell you what part of the story it was in. Yeah. And the Death of Superman, I suppose, is the classic example of that, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
I remember Dark Phoenix. I remember being so invested in these characters and so loving them, you know, and like reading and rereading them. And then the death of, you know, the Dark Phoenix thing came, and there was this rumor she was going to die, and that gripped everyone. Yeah. You know, everyone's like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? But they didn't need to relaunch it as soon as she died, which is what they do now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, because it was dealing with the aftermath then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Punisher in it, this final days. And I thought, when I was reading it years ago, so I fucking know, is this the end of The Punisher? It was like the 12 issue countdown.
Yeah,
so that was a good one. Yeah, I agree. Those kind of like the comics with the subheadings. Time,
I suppose.
Also, I think we're becoming the bitter and cynical comic readers. Well, no character stays dead. But then again, what would the 12-year-old us be like if we were reading comics now? Would we be thinking like that? I don't necessarily think we would. If you're reading comics at the time, you're still going to be, what's going to happen with this character?
Yeah, and I've experienced that, because obviously my son reads comics. I forced him, held his eyes open, and made him read comics.
Clockwork Orange, and
I've seen that through his eyes, about him getting excited and telling me all about storylines and stuff like that. You know, I kind of get that.
I think we should never lose sight. I mean, we can be bitter and cynical and obviously snarky about a million things, but never lose sight of the fact that there's a legion of other comic fans that are just starting to learn to love comics.
Yeah. And we got to remember, not the whole of people who read comics are these people on the internet who spout off about it all the time. Yeah. There's a lot of guys I see in the comic shop, I chat to them every week, and I like to think I'm still one of them. And we go in and we're excited about that new issue of Thor or that new issue of the X-Men or whatever it's going to be, and we talk about it, and that's what we're interested in. We're just interested in the story and the art and what's happening and, you know, that sort of thing. We're not interested in like, oh, yeah, they're doing this because they've got a movie coming out, or, oh, these two artists have fallen out, so they're not working together. We're just interested in the story, and that's what's important. You know, let's remember that, you know.
If you want all that, you go and do a comic on Geordie Shore or something like that, don't you? And,
if only we'd read that.
Yeah.
He'd be Love Island, the comic, and then they can gossip about that on fan sites.
Holly Hagen does look like a superhero, though, to me.
So we've all got to come up with a pitch for how you would do the Love Island comic. What would you do?
I've never seen Love Island, actually. I have to admit, I haven't seen one.
This is like a celebrity... half a dozen blokes, half a dozen girls, and then they got to
you've got to go with the venereal disease that makes them into flesh-eating zombies infesting the island.
Well, it would either be that, or
the two that are holding out who aren't having sex are the ones that survive.
Yeah, or you do battle royale.
That's good. We'll deal those with sex toys.
You know. Oh my word. Do you want to read that comic first? Then email us.
Find it on Comic House.
If you want to draw that, please write in. I will write it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. You've opened yourself up there, haven't you, Tony? Anyway, like as we speak now, in just a matter of weeks, we're going to be heading down to Leamington Spa for the amazing Leamington Comic Con. And, Dan, you're the man that's decided to organise this for the past few years.
Fourth one now. Fourth one, yeah. Bloody hell. I don't know where the time's gone.
It just gets away from you, doesn't it? But how has the prep for this year's show been going? Because you've got quite a cracking number of guests.
Big lineup.
I've kind of done it before now, so I kind of all of the bits and pieces that I need to do to pull the con together are kind of really easy. It annoys Lisa, my wife, because I don't write anything down, so I just do it all from memory, and that annoys her and frustrates her because she likes to plan things meticulously. It's kind of, you know, we're used to doing it now, so actually pulling the con together is quite a simple process. But we've kind of decided to kind of go big, or try and go big this year on the guest lineup. So you know, we've always had kind of strong kind of guests at the shows, but we wanted to really try and take it up a level this year, and I kind of think we've done that with who we've got lined up.
Did you want to talk through who you got coming, dude? Or
yeah, so we've got John Wagner, who was supposed to be on the pod.
Yeah, we love John. John's brilliant,
which is great, and really easy to kind of deal with as well. To set up as a guest, literally an email fired off, and then within 5 minutes, I'll attend. So that's kind of how I like it. We've got Al Ewing as well, who's a Al's former great. Guest on the show as well, and he's doing some really good stuff at the moment with
Al's
Marvel.
Doing that aforementioned Avengers series I just mentioned with Mark Waid. He is such a good writer, Al. He doesn't get the recognition I think he should get because his Dread stuff's great. His Marvel stuff is outstanding. Yeah, his Ultimate series is brilliant. You know, the Inhuman story he did was great. You know, he really is a good writer. And he's UK-based and everything. But he writes both for 2000 AD and for American companies, like, non-stop.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. So I mean, again, you know, kind of, you know, a small show like us kind of kicking off with John Wagner and Al Ewing, we're quite, we're really kind of pleased with that. We've got John Davis Hunt as well, who's been killing, you know, the artwork on Wildstorm with Warren Ellis.
Cool.
And
nice.
He's been doing the Clean Room as well. Have you guys seen that?
Oh, I haven't read it. I've heard of it. Eisner
nominated with Gail Simone. He does the artwork on that, which is fantastic. Then we've got Jay Gunn, who again, former guest of the show with you guys. Sarah Grayley as well, who, you know, Kim Reaper, Rick and Morty, things like that. So we've kind of
we hopefully are going to get her on the show at some point. I'll keep reminding her. But she's a lady who a creator rather who sells an absolute shipload of books every week.
Yeah,
you know, her sales are just incredible, through the roof. And she's doing the Rick and Morty stuff and the Grim Kim reprint. They both sell like really well, you know. Yeah.
And then she's doing her own stuff like Pizza Witch and stuff like that. Oh, so she's got a real big fan base. I mean, if you go on her Facebook page, she's got about 150,000 people on the page or something. Yeah. It's mental. Yeah. Absolutely mental. So then we've got, you know, you guys coming along as well, which is great.
That.
And you'll be
you can't have everything.
You can't have everything. Yeah, exactly. we'd sent out 100 guest invites before we got to you. And then we've got Susie Gander as well, who's you know, her artwork as well is absolutely fantastic at the moment. Really kind of up in her game big time.
Yeah, I was chatting with Susie this morning. She was mentioning it. Yeah, Susie and I are doing a little story together, and we were on the phone chatting this morning about it. And really looking forward to it. Yeah, her and the beard are coming, aren't they? Yeah.
Yes, that's it. Absolutely. Yeah. And then the last kind of guest that we got is the Etherington brothers as well. So kind of high energy.
I think they're known as the millionaire Etherington
brothers. The gold-plated Etherington brothers.
Yeah. What's their Kickstarter up to now? Something? Is it like 100 and something thousand?
I think it's 175. At the moment, I'll just have a look. Keep talking.
Yeah, funny enough, I've just had a text message. I'd read it out from Emily Owen. It says, "Happy fucking Easter." There you go. That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah,
lovely.
Happy Easter. Yeah. Emily.
Happy Easter, Emily. There you go.
You shared a Conan image with him crucified, which is great. really blasphemous, obviously. But, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was incorrect. It's not 175. It's 186,000 with 5 days.
Now, what were they going for? Like 1,000 or something?
1,000.
Yeah.
And they've got 3,515 backers.
Who says there's no money in comics?
Yeah. Imagine one look at the other. It's like, what are we going to do with that money? Just like blow your cheeks out. Don't fuck knows. Fuck knows.
Yeah. But do you have to remember, they now have to fulfill 3,515 orders because their minimum pledge is the actual book. They don't do any of this digital stuff.
Right.
It's properly, So they're going to have a full-time job packaging.
Made of power.
If you've raised 180 grand, I think you might be able to outsource the sending of those comics. What do you reckon?
You'd hope.
I put my back out for 2 weeks' work for 180 grand.
I'm sure they won't be doing a podcast with Dan talking about going to the post office twice a week to post the awesome anthology.
Let's hope they got the postage right on that, eh?
Yeah, fucking hell.
No, I mean, that's just 180 grand or 186 grand. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous for a Kickstarter.
Like, great product. Like, yeah. Great product. And they're real dudes. And I know they work really hard. Especially that weekly tutorial. I think one of them gets up at the crack of dawn to get it done before they leave the house.
Yeah, and not only are constantly sharing other people's work. They are constantly live and breathe comics. So,
I did that panel with them at Cardiff last year, and they were such good company, really good.
Yeah.
And they're great for the saucepans, aren't they, as well? You know, they're really encouraging.
Yeah. Which is children, let's not forget.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
I was just about to say that, and then I kind of figured it out before I opened my mouth.
You do need Google Translate on whenever you're talking to Tony.
But that's
Urban Dictionary.
But it's the main reason that why we went for the Etherington Brothers, though, because our show because we let in under 13s free at Leamington, we really want to encourage a kind of new generation of comic creators.
Yeah.
So like having people like that in, my son, I read the Phoenix to him as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Things like that. There's a bookshop in Kenilworth that started stocking the Phoenix as well, and we've been promoting
that.
And if
you like
the
Phoenix, we may be talking a bit more to them very soon.
I like the way you did that in your sort of sexy radio voice as well.
Thank you. I was trying to be Adrian Barbeau from The Fog. Hey there, guys.
If you are anything like Adrian Barbeau, please come around my house now.
Okay. Right. Hang on. I'm just going. Oh, dear.
I might have to watch Swamp Thing again later.
Oh God. Isn't that Heather Locklear?
That's the sequel.
Oh,
yeah, that's a turn.
Shame on me.
Will you shut up? I'm trying to talk about Leamington Comic Con.
Right. Who else have you got?
So that's the kind of guests. And then we've got a load of small press creators as well. We've got John Late there, Howlbound Media, Lyndon White, the guys from Reckless Hero, Nick Prolix, Daryl Thorpe, Rachel Smith. There's a whole list of them. That's just some of the that I scribbled down off the top of my head. So we've got our kind of biggest lineup yet that we've had as a show in terms of guests. And
that's a lot of fresh faces as well, isn't it? There's a lot of folks there that haven't done Leamington before, if I'm correct.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And that was in my thinking this year. So we've got about 60%, 65% of people have never done the Leamington show before.
Okay.
So I've kind of had to, there's always some people that we, kind of who want to come back, and we ask them back because we like their work and they seem to do well at the show. So, we really wanted to kind of have a push and kind of recycle and, bring in a new group of creators this year. So, like I say, we've done that. So, we're chuffed with what we've got.
And it's some great names.
It's a show we don't have, huge, we only have like kind of what we've got 35, 40 exhibitors. So it's not like we've got hundreds and hundreds of tables there, but it's good to kind of bring new faces in and meet new creators and things like that and try and branch out from our immediate kind of network and work with some other people, which is good.
Yeah. So as an organizer, Dan, do you, because a few people will be traveling to this from a not like, super overseas or anything like that, but certainly a little bit of distance. So do you like put them up the night before, take them out for a beer? Is that part, do you see that as part of your sort of organizer duties?
Not everybody has that, but some people are just happy to travel up on the morning and things like that. But we do put people up in hotels, sort the travel and other bits and pieces, and we end up going, having a beer after the show. Once we've turned the venue back into a venue and cleared it all up, then we end up having a few beers in the town with some of the guests and some of the small press creators and stuff like that. It really kind of depends what they need. Some guests just kind of come along and don't ask for anything. Others will want a hotel or a train ticket or whatever it is like that. So we just approach that as and when and see what we need to get them to come to the show.
I get you. So as a guest, are you entitled to anything? Is there any sort of little riders that we might be able to ask you for?
Depends what you're after.
You sound like my drug dealer. Don't do drugs. They're wrong.
There
you go. No, really, it depends. It depends kind of what the requests are. So, we approach it as and when and see what people ask for. And, it's like with John, John was nice and easy to deal with, but he'd said, oh, do you want me to ask Carlos? To come to the show. And I was like, but then that means flying somebody in and hotels, which we just couldn't afford to do with
For those who don't know, Carlos Esquira is doing Strontium Dog with at the moment, and he lives in southern Spain.
We just couldn't stretch to that. We could do a hotel and a train ticket, but then once you start flying people in and you're picking them up from the airport and stuff like that for a small show like us, it starts kind of stretching what we're capable of doing,
and it starts putting ticket prices up sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah,
we've been trying to kind of keep keep the ticket prices low as we possibly can, really.
So what about events on the day? Have you got you're doing a kids workshop thing again, are you? Or
we've got Daryl Thorpe again is kind of doing a kids workshop where he's going to teach kind of children how to start doing kind of basic sequential sequences and drawing of characters and things like that as well. So very much aimed at youngsters.
Tag up bus shelters.
Well, we could go with that. We'll get some spray paint and stuff, and we could go and do it. There's a bus shelter outside the venue, so we can do it there. Why not?
As long as it says Leamington Comic Con 2019, you don't mind, do you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's it.
No, Daryl doesn't do that.
So we've got kids workshops. We've got other activities going on for young kids as well. So we kind of got paper eye masks, and we're getting children to design their own kind of superhero eye mask and things like that. We've got kind of colouring tables and bits and pieces and some just other kind of fun games and stuff like that for children. Again, it's trying to encourage kids to come in and be creative and draw and things like that, which is good.
Yeah.
And then we've got talks, workshops, live podcasts, and one for you, Tony, our annual cosplay competition.
Brilliant. I'm all ready for that.
So, we like to keep Star the day fire. Packed with stuff. We do like to keep the day packed with things to do. Yeah. So it's not, it isn't just a comic mart that you're coming into. It's, there's live talks. You're hosting a talk, Tony, with John Wagner, which
is we're looking forward to that. So, I'm going to try and record that as well. So it should be interesting.
Well, hopefully it will record.
Yeah. Sam was going to mention Rock of the Reds.
Yes.
On the show. It's actually brought up many shows ago by John Late.
Yeah, so that was when the first issue was out, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you can read it on Comixology, and we've read it. Did you want to give a little summary, Dan, of what it's about?
Comic House, sorry.
So I'm just dying off mic, so hold on a second.
Okay.
So while Daniel dies, you can send any emails of condolences to... are you right, Dan?
Yeah, sorry.
I honestly thought you died then.
Yeah, that's a joke. Right.
I had to put the mic on silent, otherwise that'd have been a hell of a bit of editing for you there, Vince.
Was it a massive fart?
No. It wasn't.
I always press mute when I fart.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
I didn't know there was a mute button. I've been doing that all through the show.
Yeah. Is that in your sex hotel in York, where you are?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Just sat in my pants in front of a mirror.
Oh, God. Ah.
At least you aren't on top of a mirror.
No.
Oh. Oh, God.
So, Rock of the Reds.
Yeah.
Dan, did you... A little,
the Reds.
A little summary. So originally, as I understand, it was going to be called Rom of the Rovers.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen an interview with John where he says, look, I think we would have probably got sued around that one. Yeah. One, Roy the Rovers is a little too close. And I think IDW had just bought the license back to Rom the Space Knight. And,
yeah, which is Mattel, so they changed it.
Yeah, because I got the preview copy for it and it was called Rom of the Reds at the time. And I remember saying to John Freeman, is he really going to call it this? You know what I mean? Because of Rom the Road with the Space Knight. And then it changed when the actual first issue came out. It was changed.
I can read this story synopsis on Comic House.
Oh, good idea.
A black comedy about revenge, redemption, and the beautiful game. Industry legends John Wagner and Alan Grant team up once again to bring you Rock of the Reds alongside stunning art by Dan Cornwell. Rock of the Reds is a six-part series showing what happens when the lives of a dangerous intergalactic outlaw and an arrogant footballer collide. With his homeworld destroyed, Rock of Araka... Oh, whatever that alien world is, he's on the run and needs a hiding place. And that hiding place happens to be the troubled football star, Kyle Dixon.
Yeah. It is what it says. It really is a mixture of the old school sort of Roy of the Rovers, is he going to score last minute in the with like this sort of slightly darkly humorous 2000 AD type story.
Yeah.
Both Alan and John used to write. They used to write those weekly stories for, you know, Valiant and Lion and all these sort of things, didn't they? You know, and it's got the real feel of it, but add into the mix an up-to-date sort of 2000 AD feel to it as well.
Yeah. Almost like a farce at times.
Yeah, it is a sci-fi football comedy, isn't it? That's essentially what it is. And it, like, straight off the bat, it's hilarious.
Yeah, really good.
If someone pitched it to me like that, I would say I don't want to read that comic ever. But when I started reading the first one, I just mainlined the rest of them the same... on the commute home. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I read really I'd read issue one before, but I read the whole of it all again in a day. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And it's got that, we were talking about this before we come on air, it's got that Roy of the Rovers tension about the end of a game thing going on as well, isn't it? You don't know whether the added tension of will they win the match with will they find out that he's really an alien.
Yeah.
So
it's really well done. It's kind of that commentary that you kind of get in football comics where you hear people in the crowd talking saying, oh, look, he's dummied the keeper. And I presume it's just to explain to anyone not knowing what the fuck's going on.
Exposition, isn't it? Sort of thing. Yeah.
I mean, I will say this. Big shout out to the artist. What's his name again?
Oh, so good. Dan Cornwell.
Dan Cornwell is absolutely smashed it. And, like, this is a guy that looks like this is full-time, and it's not full-time, from what I gather.
No. Well, it is now, isn't it? He's a friend of mine on Facebook, and he's a bus driver from Brighton or somewhere, I think, and he's just given up the day job of driving a bus. I think he posted day driving a bus, because he's now been working in 2000 AD as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's gone and drawn some dread and stuff.
You see these pages, and it's without a doubt.
He's got all the things down of, like, this is in England. This is, like, in the UK, and you really get that feeling for it. Sometimes... you read comics set in the country and it could be fucking anywhere, but the detail and the stuff is so on point and spot
it's
on.
It's parochial, isn't it? It's got that sort of English small town.
That's one of the things I like about it. It wasn't like, oh, they're in the Premier League or wherever. It's not that sort of feel. That's what I like about it. Another thing is whether you're like a sports fan or not, to draw actual sort of like that kind of action, the football action, and have it kinetic and be alive and, like, you know, to be readable as well, that takes some skill, because I've seen a lot of stuff and it can look quite static.
I
completely agree with you, Vince, on that. It does it does look like you can see the picture moving when you're watching the panels.
Yeah.
You know,
the
it's really,
the ball
really
really
good stuff.
Really works,
good stuff. Yeah,
it's good that I'd have thought the artist would have the football stuff down pat or the alien stuff, but it's both.
Yeah,
it's really really well done.
My favourite villains in a comic this year are the Executors.
Yeah,
the biker aliens that turn up. How good are they? Mm. I really want to see a series just about them, I've got to tell you.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I mean, I don't know whether you guys know, but the trade, so the six issues trade is launching at Leamington on the 14th of April. So that's kind of quite a big thing for us to kind of secure. So
I'll definitely get a copy of that.
Yeah, yeah. I am as well. Although I'm not finished reading all six yet. I'm a couple in issues in, but I'm going to definitely be picking up the trade at Leamington this year.
Yeah, that's going
to. I've got to tell you, my favourite end to a series. Yeah. I won't ruin it, but it just—they did right by it. I got to the end and I went, "Yes, spot on."
It definitely really feels good. Like one that could go on, like just I'm not to the end. I've not finished six, but it feels like a weekly one that would just keep on going and going and going.
Yeah,
and I get the sense that John and Alan have got a little love for football as well. There's little bits in it that thought made me think that is where he gets revenge on the ref. Have you seen a bit where he shrinks the ref down?
Yeah.
Yeah, thinking, oh, everyone must be saying that. Oh, yeah, ref's a bastard and all that sort of thing. You know, sort of football thing, innit?
But it's having that, you know, if you're a football fan, it's being able to get that across, but also for the casual comic reader to do it. And I will say with this series, some people may think, oh, football comic? Look, give it a shot, people, because one issue in and you'll be a fan of it.
I like to think that football fans might go, oh, that's about football.
Well, I'd
like to see that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And recognise that sort of small town, you know, football vibe and stuff. You know,
because the alien lives with his mum and dad and that sort of thing. You know, with the person whose body he's replaced, you know, lives with his mum and dad. And there's like kid, and there's the local policeman who sort of he hypnotises, doesn't he, to help him out? And it's really good. Yeah. There's a genuine affection for the medium that comes across from it. Do you know what I mean? And it is a little bit retro, but it's not done in a way that isn't accessible to people that are reading comics now.
Because John in that interview said he had to really kind of work hard to get it all in, and the story just moves at an absolutely blinding pace. It's just non-stop.
I mean
a lot of those ideas you could pull out over several issues, but they're very very punchy, very quick.
So it's brilliant to know that the trade, because we all know there's a lot of trade readers out there, is available at Leamington. So it's already got a couple of sales off us.
Yeah, I'm gonna double dip.
I think that's gonna do well, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to John on the way. I know Tony, you've got a panel with him, haven't you?
Yeah, we're gonna do a panel with him, aren't we? So we'll probably sit down behind his table and have a chat with him when they luck and get it on mic.
So cool. But Leamington itself, this is one of the cons that has been in a different venue every year, hasn't it?
Don't I know it as well?
How has that adventure been?
It's how do I put it? It's pain in the arse. it's just trying to get used to the venue, really. I mean, we've kind of, you know, when we did our first show, which you guys didn't come to, was in a small like assembly rooms at the pump rooms in Leamington. So we literally, there was about enough room to fit like 20 tables in a perimeter of this venue, and it was very kind of cozy and compact. But then we had 1,000 people turn up, you know, bloody hell, how are we going to get all these in? And then we went to the assembly which you guys came to. That was crazily busy, that venue. But then it was multi-floored as well, and that kind of brings its own challenges where, you know, when I'm in the show, I kind of like to keep calm, but I also like to keep an eye on what's going on as well. I'm doing stuff, but I don't like to be like, I'm doing things all day, but I don't like to be visibly seen like I'm doing things, if you know what I mean by that. So I'll be doing stuff in the background while the show's going on and making things tick over. But when we're at the assembly, it was kind of, there was like three floors to it, and I just, you know, I'm like, they're going, well, I don't actually know what the bloody hell's going on in here. There's too many people in here for a start, and I can't see, you know, whether we're too busy in the panel room or upstairs or whatever. And that kind of was quite frustrating.
I think the thing with that one in the assembly rooms as well is it, because it's a gig venue, you could almost, still lingering in the air was the stale smell of the gig from the night before, wasn't there?
Yeah, because they had Majora on the night before Leamington in 2015, but then they had some thrash metal band in the little pub music venue next door. So Majora's doing an acoustic set with this background noise of thrash metal going up.
Yeah, and then you moved on from there. So then you went to the
Spa Centre. So now Spa Center was last year, and that was a kind of great venue for the show. But then it was kind of like, you know, how I felt with that venue. It's kind of, I wanted to kind of keep Leamington more of a grassroots show. And then kind of felt going into like a kind of conference center or, you know, purpose built venue like that kind of was taking away from the fact of what, you know, Leamington is a grassroots indie show. And I wanted Leamington to be kind of a bit more quirky than just a kind of, you know, a very clinical comic convention where you're going into like a conference center with, you know, where it's just, you know, bland rooms and other bits and pieces. So we ended up booking the parish church. So the parish church in Leamington is kind of 200-year-old sandstone building, cathedral size with pillars and archways and things like that. And it's very kind of amazing building when you go in it. And it feels more like what the Leamington show should be about, which is a bit more quirky and a bit more kind of grassroots. That makes sense, Connor?
Yeah, definitely. It's weird as well. Do you know what I mean? I go to, there's a gig venue in Islington, the chapel, that I go and see bands at. And occasionally I think, would the church really approve of this music? Do you know what I mean? And it's almost like you're in a church and there's like, there's quite a few swear words. There's quite a few comics about demons and vampires and stuff like that. And there's a lot of rather strange people wandering around with, you know, bad sort of, let's say, bodily cleanliness, and you know what I mean. So, and I sometimes do think, you know, I mean, I'm not religious, I'm an atheist, but I think, would the little baby Jesus agree with this? I'm not really 100% sure, but it's a weird sort of confliction, isn't it? I suppose, but you're right, I completely agree with you. I think that's the way we got to take it. We got to be quirky, we've got to have a bit of character, and you're right. Some of these conference centres, because we don't go outside, we kind of forget that we're what city we're in sometimes. I'll think about a convention that we've tabled at, Vince. I think, where was that again? Because it all kind of looks the same inside, doesn't it, sometimes?
Yeah. You
know? I mean, they're easier to manage because they're built for the job, but it's kind of like, you know, like I say, I just find it a bit bland and a bit too, you know, clinical for it. And I just, you know, and it's bloody expensive normally as well, which also doesn't help. So, you know, whereas, like I say, I wanted to kind of go back to more kind of quirkier venues and a bit make it a bit more of an experience. So you think, you know, people come away and think, oh bloody hell, what a great building that comic convention was in, not a, like you say, a generic conference center where it could be in any town and city in the country and you wouldn't know where the bloody hell you were. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe go the next step, and if you've got like a confessional, I could sit on one side.
Oh, well, we can do that.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we can.
We could have some kind of dark communion, some black holy communion thing.
You say about the church as well, you know, kind of, is it appropriate for kind of the kind of things going on in there? Well, this is a church that played The Life of Brian on a big screen in there.
Our local church had the art outside.
Sorry, mate.
My local church a couple of months ago had like a do on, and they had a guy dressed up as Doctor Who, and had a Dalek next to him. So I thought, yeah, fair enough. Okay. You're doing that. It was freaking people out because the Dalek had like a tray of Haribo, and obviously the kids wouldn't go near it.
Was it a priest inside it?
I don't know. There was someone inside it operating it.
Believe in Jesus.
I don't know. Some of these cosplayers like to get it on with each other, don't they? I wonder if they'll do that in a church. That might be a bit
I've
dark.
I've never seen that, Tony. Yeah. I'm submitting three shows.
Yeah, there we go.
Looked and can't see it. It's...
Look up an ex-hamster. It's on there.
Be a couple of furries in cubicle two. That might be cool.
Be in the vestry. There's furries in the vestry. Get them out, man.
Oh, dear.
Is that a nun or is it a sexy nun? Yeah, I hope there's no sort of sexy nun cosplay going on.
Yeah,
it'll only be me.
If the priest does turn up, they might think, oh, mate, nice preacher cosplay.
You know what? That's an angle I've not come at for this show. What stupid am I? You know, we should be playing on that, and we're not.
Yeah.
Always come to us for ideas, mate. That's what we always say.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
May not be good, but we do have ideas.
So what is the actual date, and where can people get tickets if they haven't got them already?
So the date is the 14th of April. And you can go to spartowncomics.co.uk/LemComicCon. There's lots of information there and some of the blogs and that we've done with John and Al Ewing and people like that. There's ticket links. Or if you just use Facebook and Twitter or Instagram, then you can just, if you just search for Lem Comic Con, and yeah, you'll find our pages there.
Yeah, have a look at our Twitter. We've retweeted it quite a few times.
Yeah,
definitely.
And so we don't shut up. Let's just put it that way. We're always posting and shouting and things like that.
You can't afford to if you've got a convention. I think you have to keep sort of.
Yeah, you'll always look back and think, "Oh, I wish I'd tweeted a bit more about that." You can't do that, can you?
Yeah. I think if you sort of like you say, you mix it up. With you're not just saying buy tickets, you know, you can say that, but then you mix it up with this person's going to be here, we're going to have this here, you know, you can,
yeah,
that's a way to sort of keep it more interesting rather than just a hard sell, I think, most of the great conventions that we like going to, they do that anyway, you know, so
yeah. And you've got we're doing a panel, aren't we? We're doing a live pod.
You are. A live pod there, yeah, which is great.
And our special guest on that is the aforementioned Mr. Gunn, Jason Wilson. He's coming on. Yep. He's going to be I'm road tripping with Jason up there, so we're driving up together. So, and if anyone's ever seen Jason on a panel, he's like full of energy and enthusiasm. It should be an interesting one. He's one of our favourite guests as well, guys, isn't he?
Yeah, he's great. Yeah,
from when he came.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to meeting him. He seems like a really, really nice bloke as well. So really looking forward to meeting him at Leamington.
Yeah, and if he's got any prints available at his table, go by and get them because they are the best. Some of our favourite bits of art, aren't they?
Yeah. Over
the last few years. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He really sent me a couple of surface tension prints. A couple of what was it last year? And absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I've got one on my wall as we speak. So,
yes.
There you go.
Yes. In fact, it's you opened me up to them, Vince. You said, "Oh, you'll have a look at this," and they're amazing. Yeah, yeah. Really good. Yeah.
He keeps the Coalface book. He's kind of working on. We don't know where that's at the moment. I don't think, but I'm pray to God that he does it because this looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I've got to read. Kindly, he sent me the script to read. He had a couple of questions for me about something I knew about, and it's. The best comic script I've read for a long time. People should be all over this, you know. It's such a great idea. I don't think we're not in the position to spoil it, but sure if you pop by his table, he'll tell you a bit about it, I think.
Didn't he get some, he's got some good news about Surface Tension.
Yeah, Surface Tension's got a movie deal, is it, or a TV deal? I can't remember.
I think it's a TV deal.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think you want a TV deal over the movie one, I guess creatively, maybe not money wise.
Yeah, there's more there than you'd fit in a movie. Yeah, if you want to get
Well, that's good, because then there's always been like talks ever since he was on the show and stuff. Like we knew that there was stuff in the works.
That feels like a kind of series like Dare the Triffids or the Tripods would air on like a 6-7 o'clock on a Saturday night on BBC or something, you know, like one of those TV shows.
Design, sort of lovely designs on it, isn't there?
There's so many good kind of small press comics there where you think would make really good kind of TV shows.
Thanks.
I think I always think that something like The Kill Screen would make a really
good
especially a bit like where you die.
I forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me.
We were talking about
one comic and I got killed in it.
Tony's, I think, trumps all of us in that regard. He's been in the most.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I am very proud of the fact that Lambeau included me as Esmond's bar in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
We're all the
magicians.
That's I'm quite proud of that one. That's one of my favourites.
It's a real seedy dive, isn't it?
Yeah. It's sort of the sort of thing where you see Mr. Jester Diablo leaving the magician with a little brown paper bag full of magazines he's bought. Something like that. Do you know what I mean?
What are you, what are you talking about?
We all die in...
It's always plastic bags.
We all die in Vanguard. We're in Vanguard issue 11. We get killed in that.
Yeah.
So that's the high point.
What happens to us, Dan?
One of us gets shot through the eye and then the rest of us get shot by a Pendragon. Spoilers.
That's after we merge together into a hideous...
Yes.
Beast.
That's
a good metaphor for the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also a little fever dream that I've had.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really enjoyed Vanguard, Dan. Really, really enjoyed that.
Oh, cheers.
I come to think, I've got that for you. Well, I tried to steal it from your True Believers, and it was it was really good. Really good.
Have, copies of that on sale on the day, as well as issues of The Awesome Comic Issue 1.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's back. The Beast is back.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think we've blown out of T-shirts, haven't we?
We still we've got a few larges and a few mediums left, not many.
I think I need to get a large one, actually, because I've put on a bit of weight since I bought the medium at London Super Comic Con.
He's double dipping. I've never heard of someone double dipping on a T-shirt before.
Don't. It's horrible. Honestly, you don't want to see it.
That's the life of a comic con organizer. It's just like extravagant food, wine, caviar. That's what it does to you.
What it says, I should do more work on the Comic Con and less eating. That's what it says.
I could never tell anyone to stop eating lots of nice food. Well, maybe I could.
If they're eating
Doner Kebab and Three Savoy's nice food, though, Dan?
Well, yeah, after you've had a few.
How many sausages could you get in your mouth, Dan?
Well, I don't know. We'll try three at Lem when you guys are there.
That's the answer we wanted to hear.
Oh God, it's gone bad. We've only been doing it an hour. It's gone.
Just hit the 9 o'clock.
He'll be saying that as well.
Yeah.
it was a joke. Was it? No.
I can't believe I just fucking said that.
Well, you can't take it back now. I'm not editing that bit out. Yes, we're thoroughly looking forward to the show, though. It is going to be an awesome day.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I'm going to... there's loads of books I need to pick up. I'm really looking forward to picking up a few things there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm desperately trying... I'm definitely going to get some original art from Jason. I've been meaning to for ages, but it's about time.
Yeah, and if you haven't got Awesome Comics issue 1 yet, then definitely come to our table and pick it up, because it's the last leg of the tour before issue 2 comes out.
Yeah.
Which we're busy on now, aren't we?
We are indeed. Yeah. I'm absolutely knackered today because I've been inking most of the day. that's inking, INKIG. did I just spell that wrong?
Another moment on our WhatsApp group where you said I'm inking. No, I'm not masturbating. It's made me tired.
Yeah,
and I think one of those.
Yeah,
yeah. But I think we'll probably get arrested if anyone ever makes our WhatsApp group, you know, visible to everyone
else. Probably. But you'll never know, folks. Just imagine. It's like Pandora's box. Yes, but the second issue is coming along very nicely. It's going to blow your heads off.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Did you see the page or the panels that Nick put on Instagram today?
Yeah.
Nick has
started. He's been in New York recently, hasn't he? I think with his
he travels the world.
International playboy.
Playboy. Nick Prolix is he's come back and he's immediately started smashing out the panels. Ooh,
sounds a bit looking weird. Good.
But it's going to be good. So as is Leamington Comic Con. So there you go. April 14th. It will be. you got to be the most confident man in the world. You can't go, well, hopefully.
what time the doors open, dude, for that?
10 o'clock. So if you've got advance tickets, you get in from 10, and then cash on the door at 11 o'clock. So kind of what I would say is, if you want to come in, we're planning to do the talk with John Wagner at 11 o'clock. So what I would suggest, if you want to sit in on that panel, is buy an advance ticket and get in before 11 o'clock.
Okay. Yeah, good. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. I've got loads of questions to ask of him. One of which is, which I'll plan to ask him on this, is there's a sort of a story, an urban myth, that he got a lot of his ideas for Judge Dredd stories by looking at CFAX, what he said on the CFAX in the morning.
A
bit about that. So just take the idea of whatever it said on CFAX on the news, and he'd write that into a Judge Dredd story. Amazing. It's interesting.
Amazing. Amazing.
You'd sort of write it down, wait about 30 seconds for it to change the page, and then write another bit down. There's loads of people who won't get that joke.
No.
Yeah.
But those who will get it will really appreciate it, Dan. That's what
I'm glad.
And I tell you, he needs a shout out as well as BHP Comics, who are the guys who are publishing Rock of the Reds.
Yeah, they are a really interesting. I know we've talked about a few of their books recently. Yeah. Really interesting small press company out of Scotland. Yeah, yeah, really good stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
And a lot of their books are on Comic House as well. Yeah, yeah. Well worth
it. We said this like the kind of the renaissance of small press comics in Scotland.
Yeah. It does seem to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll be talking about lots and lots more coming out of there very soon. Anyway, well, speaking of shout outs, that's a perfect segue, Tony.
There you go.
Yeah. Let's do we have any shout outs this week?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
That is almost your, that's almost your motto every week, isn't it?
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. I've got three. The Mark Robinson, at Little Mark R on Twitter, did. I think we're going to say, I'm not. I've decided not to post it because I think we'll probably save it for the fan art section of the next issue.
Yes.
He did the best bit of Cockney Kung Fu fan art. We absolutely loved it, didn't we?
Yeah, it was hilarious.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, and we've had another excellent bit featuring all three main characters from Mauro as well.
Yeah.
Which I think if you're on the Facebook group, you can see it because he posted it. But that is brilliant as well.
Yeah. We're going to have, as well as the letters page, we're planning the inside back cover this time. We're hopefully, if we get enough, we're going to have like a fan art page. You know, like you used to have in the classic comics of old.
Yeah. And in 2008, they used to do it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
if we can get their ages on it, that'd be great.
Yes, yes.
So, Mauro, 28.
Yeah.
Age 28.
Or if you don't send us at your age, we'll just make it up because that'd be funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to have a little page with a bit of fan art. So, and we'll probably do that for each issue. So as you
yeah.
If there's a character in the comic that you want to draw, go ahead and draw it and send it to us. Likewise, we really, we're on the lookout for letters again for our letters section. Yeah. Inappropriate comments. Yes, that's the letters page, which has been one of the most popular bits of the comic from a lot of the people who have read it.
Yeah.
It is our letters page where if you like anything about the stories in the book, if you want to ask some questions, then send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Because he's the man manning the letters page. Although me and Dan may dip in occasionally just to answer a letter or two.
Yeah.
But we want your letters because
I'm in charge of the letters page. It's cool, isn't it? Because I don't actually know how anything works on the computer, so I have to sort of write it out in a notebook, photograph it, and send it to you. And then you, yeah, so that's kind of how we're working on it at the moment. But yeah,
it's a bit of fun. It makes it a bit more personal. And if you just want to be printed in issue two. And then to send us a letter because the deadline will be probably end of April, I would say.
Yeah,
so there's plenty of time.
Yeah,
yes, you've got
plenty of time. Yeah. But yeah, like, get us a letter by the end of April, and it could be in issue two of Awesome Comics. So there you go. What was your next shout out, Tony?
Comic Scene, comicscene.org, where it's a subscription mail order only 64-page magazine about comics. It's not your usual loads of image and very little writing. It's very much along the lines of fanzine. Have you had a look at yours yet, Vince?
What, fanzine?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I've had a look at it. It's a weighty tome.
Yeah, which is it's also on Sequential Fanzine, and it's on Comic House as well.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. It's more like that. It's just talking about comics without, you know, like SFX and all these sort of comic, is it Comic Heroes, used to be like loads of pictures and very little writing. Yeah. It's much more for your money in that. I'm doing the small press corner element of it. Pat Mills is in it as well. He's written a thing in it. Loads of Richard Sheaf's in it. John Freeman's in it. Loads of really good friends of ours, good people who like really interested in comics and the study of it. If you go to comicscene.org, you can subscribe. And I think there's a special deal going on this weekend, so go and have a look. There you go.
That's my John Wagner's contributor as well.
Oh, is he? Oh, okay. I saw the proof, actually. I saw the proof came through the other day, and it looks fucking brilliant. Really good. Yeah, I'm just finishing my article for the next issue now. Yeah, very good.
Nice. Another shout-out. We just want to say a thank you to whoever nominated us for a Yancey Street Award. We forgot to mention it last week. Not just us, but Dan Butcher. He's got in there twice. Our boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of. I was really surprised and really, really pleased. Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. And Dan the Tube's nominated, which is really good.
Now the Yancey Street Awards. Which Comic Con are they taking place? Is it Edinburgh Comic Con? I believe.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
Is that towards the end of April?
I've got a feeling
same
it's the same day.
Weekend as Leamington.
Is it same weekend?
Right. Same weekend.
Yeah.
And I believe they'll be announcing the winners, I think on the 15th, maybe, or around then. But
is it at the convention, I think they're announcing?
Yeah, it is. They're going to have it, yeah. I know some people who have been on the show have picked up the Yancey Street Award before, but it just came out of the blue, and we just want to say we really appreciate
whoever it is. Really nice, yeah. There's so many people message us saying, have you seen this, by the way? And I'm like, yeah. No. Oh, and then you sort of scroll down and you think, bloody hell.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, same. Like, I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. So thank you, whoever nominated us.
Yeah. I mean, we're always the outsiders, aren't we? Because we're up against a couple
of fantastic
podcasts.
We pride ourselves in that, kind of, don't we? But
we love you, whoever nominated us. That's all we've got to say.
Yeah. We won't sadly be there to pick it up. To applaud and make that like smiley face when someone else wins.
Yeah.
We won't be able to. Yeah. But good luck to everyone who's in it.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a great list of names in it. Yeah.
I love the name of that award as well, Yancey Street.
I really do. Yeah. And have you seen the actual award? It's like the street sign.
Yeah. That's brilliant.
Yeah. It's great. Because that's Ben Grimm's home street.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
That's the gangy. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
And it comes from Delancey Street in New York, which is where Kirby lives.
What was the name of the gang? The Yancey Street something. What was the gang name in the comic?
Yancey Street Gang, yeah.
Okay.
I think there's an issue of Marvel 2-in-1 where it's him versus them, and you never really properly saw them, did you? They'd always sort of attack from the shadows and throw sort of water bombs on his head, stuff like that. Yeah, it was a great little thing.
Do we have any more shout-outs?
Yeah, just one on the Awesome Comic Talk. I'm currently running the Infinity War kind of poster redraw mashup thing, which we're it's chugging along quite nicely. There's a bunch more updates I've got to put up there. Essentially, it's the whole poster of the Infinity War, and we've put it up into squares. You claim a square, redraw it or recolor it, whatever you want to do in your style, post it up, and then it's becoming like a mosaic of all these different people's artworks. This is looking really good.
People have come up with some really good ideas. Someone's done Desperate Dan's chin as the chin of someone. That sort of thing. Yeah, really good.
Yeah. It's really taking off. It's a fun bit of artwork. So, good idea, Butcher, once again.
Yeah,
it's really good. Really good.
I did see it somewhere else. I can't claim it's the idea I had was I'm going to take that and use it on.
Yeah, but it was your idea to steal that idea.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
fuck everyone else, Dan. That's
what I'll take that credit.
Yeah, so you should. anyway, we're a comic show. We like to talk about comics. So let's recommend some to our listeners, shall we?
Yep.
Who would like to go first?
Shall I go first? Mine's actually a book that we got sent through that hasn't hit Kickstarter yet.
Oh, go for it.
Yeah.
Have you guys read this, by the way, The Edge Off? Have you?
No.
Yeah, I've begun to. It is a brain melter from the looks
of it. It is proper. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it looks brilliant.
It's The Edge Off. It's hitting Kickstarter later this month. I believe it's the 20th of April. It's written by Fraser Campbell from Alex Automatic. Art by Ian Laurie, who drew and then Emily Was Gone. Coloured by David B. Cooper, lettered by Colin Bell. Logo by Ian Laurie and Igor Balabotin. It's, like you say, it is a fucking real head. I was going to do a whole big spiel on it because I thought, it's a review copy, but then I realised, no, it's not. It's a preview copy. So I won't go into it too much. But what I can talk about is they sent the press release through, and this is the story. Mob enforcer Lee Butler was always the old man's favourite, but now the old man is gone, and Eddie, the son who always felt usurped by Lee, is calling the shots. When Lee wakes up to find himself spiked with a new designer psychotropic drug and his daughter kidnapped, he figures Eddie has worked out that Lee has been moonlighting for one of his rivals. Desperate to get his daughter back, Lee sets off in a swirling nightmare of danger and double cross, his perceptions fried, unable to tell which monsters are real and which are imagined. As the night unfolds, Lee finds himself compelled to run a violent gauntlet towards a confrontation that will force him to face up to every terrible decision he's ever made. And that kind of does tell you the story, but it doesn't do justice to what it fucking looks like, because it is fucking nuts. The cover's really nice. Really like the cover. The Edge Off logo, and they did write to sort of credit the logo design because it's got this sort of backwards lettering to it, which speaks a lot about the story and the sort of the way it plays. The cover's a figure on a white background, and there's a man's got a suit on. He's wearing two ties in that suit. Is that what people do now? Do people wear two ties? Is that a cool thing to do? I'm not sure. Maybe
I've
just to show the
that.
Sort of, duality of it all. But and he's holding an ice pick and drenched in blood. But as he's talking, or as he's looking at the camera, he's removing his face, and behind his head is sort of a sort of surreal flaming head thing. Very strange, but beautiful as well. I'm not going to go too much into the story because I don't want to ruin it for people, because I think it definitely needs to be read. But it's kind of a gangster comic, but channeled through a sort of paranoid anxiety acid dream type thing. The creators play with reality, and it uses those sort of images you get that you associate immediately with sort of British gangster fiction. You know, like the Craze and all this sort of thing, you know, the Richardsons and all this sort of classic British gangster, black suits and wise guys and old man bosses and, you know, old bars and dives. There's a hitman who carries a sort of ice pick shank, as he calls it. As you read it, it just, there's like images like there'd be someone looking in a mirror and suddenly a hole will appear in his face and sort of smoke and fire will start pouring out of it. And the reality really does sort of quake around them. It sort of explodes out in different ways. Really original ways of signifying the fall into madness and into this sort of hyper reality thing by the artwork by Laurie. Just really, really nice. I'm suddenly totally obsessed with his artwork. I think it's gorgeous. And they frame it strangely as well. At one point, there's the mouth. Someone's mouth and teeth are the frame to the image, if that makes sense, the frame to what's actually happening. Yeah. At one point, somebody's head turns into a grape with teeth, and then they're popped with a sort of, you know, like a balloon. It doesn't go anywhere that you could ever fucking possibly guess it will go. I guarantee you won't guess the ending. Really, really good. The nearest I can get to Ian's work probably would be something like Jeff Lemire on Sweet Tooth. It's got that sort of touch of a feel to it about it. Yeah. Is that what you thought, V? Or
yeah, definitely. It's got this sort of loose, almost a slightly shaky element to it, which is gives it a real character. Like soon as you see an Ian Laurie piece, you know it's immediately him. I know he's got quite a few. He's got a following from Emily Was Gone. Because now that was a popular.
Yeah, I can imagine. Very popular.
He's very good at doing quite nightmarish sort of artwork that play. You know, he could do someone going mad in their dreams, quite well. You know, great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, they quote David Lynch and Daniel Clowes as inspirations for it, and I can see that. Yeah. But they also quote the movie Performance. Has anyone seen that? The famously Jagger's in it. Have you seen that movie?
Oh, no. I haven't seen it. I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, really, really interesting. It's kind of like Get Carter on acid. They quote Get Carter as well, actually. Inherent Vice as well, which I watched last year. I really liked Inherent Vice. And The Long Good Friday. A nightmare noir is how they're describing it, which I kind of make them right on, and really interesting stuff. As I say, the Kickstarter is later this month, and then the physical copy will be released at Thought Bubble in September. If you want to follow Fraser, which I recommend, at Fraser, FRASERC 69, the number 69, or Ian Laurie is at Ian, IAIN Laurie, LAURIE, Ian Laurie on Twitter. Both well worth following. Ian's put some, I was looking at his Twitter today, and he's put some Twin Peaks fan art out, and it looks brilliant. It looks properly, that's exactly how Twin Peaks fan art should be. This sort of crazy, staring, mental-looking character. Yeah, really good stuff. Highly recommend it. Get behind it when it comes out. I'll tell you now, a lot of people get behind this. I think this will be a thing this year, this book. Really hope it is, because it deserves to be. Yeah, yes. Interesting stuff. There you go.
Thank you very much for sending in the preview, gents.
Yeah, really nice of them.
Dan,
as I said, that Mick Jagger film with Emilio Estevez.
Oh, I knew you'd go bring that up.
Free Jack? Free Jack, yeah. Fuck me, I ain't seen that in years.
Oh, Jesus. Why'd you bring that up? Just really lower the tone of the show.
I must dig out my VHS copy of that. Yeah.
Why am I not surprised you got a VHS copy of that?
Well, Mike Garley posted up, he went to some shit film fest last night, and one of them I saw on the board was I Come in Peace, and I know that's the alternative title to Dark Angel.
Yeah, that's a great film.
Yeah, he said it was a really good one. Yeah, so, there you go.
Yeah, one of Dolph's best. The Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, the guy, the villain in that, does a great interview about being discovered at Gold's Gym in LA, and just like suddenly he was in movies. Yeah.
Amazing.
Good old days.
Yeah.
Good old days.
Just rock up in the gym looking buffed and then
Yeah. Speaking of buff, guns. What is guns,
yes.
What's your choice for this week?
I read Hollow Monsters by Monty Nero.
Oh, I've read this,
I've read that as well.
Set in the '80s, it concerns horrors real and imagined, lurking in a suburban forest frequented by a gang of kids from a nearby estate, and how what happens there affects their lives and echoes through with disturbing effects. It's a very personal and spooky semi-autobiographical story, an unsettling contemporary on the nightmares at the heart of society and how lives are shaped by them over time. So yeah, I blasted through this during the week because I backed the Kickstarter. Back in so many Kickstarters nowadays, and it's becoming like almost cliche nowadays to say we need to calm down backing them, because I always fucking say it and never bloody do. But yeah, Hollow Monsters, it dips in quite heavily in nostalgia. You've got like lots of referencing of iconic symbology from like the 1980s Britain, like test car, chopper bikes, the old wood effect Ataris. It really reminded me of some of the stuff that Jay is doing in Coalface, some of the stuff he's posted up. Referencing old past stuff in the 80s. He's more focused on video games.
Yeah, Jay, I think Jay's is more sort of kitchen sink, more sort of urban. Yeah, this is more what's on in the news almost at the time, isn't it? Yeah.
So you also get flashbacks of kind of news stories of the day, like stuff with Thatcher and the IRA, etc. I think there's a shot of, like, I can remember seeing it on the news with like a wimpy restaurant is like blown out of the front, but it's all sort of way of invoking the time period. Monty really plays with the format and typography in this one. They used perhaps a lot more differently than I've seen them be used before. It's really interesting, very challenging. I've got to say, it's a really hard comic. It's a challenge for me to talk about it because there's so much going on, and there's a fair bit of setup in the first issue, which feels like it's going to play out over the next, I think it's six or seven issues.
Right, is it that many, is it? Okay.
I think so. Yeah. And then from reading the back, and it feels like it's a comic, rather than you listen to me talk about it, it's better to you to read it and get what he's trying to come up with. Do you know what I mean? It's not, it's very difficult for me to come up with a kind of a media friendly soundbite for it. But the Kickstarter's launching at the end of for part two at the end of April, and if you want to find out more about that and all the other stuff Monty does, like Death Sentence, etc., check out montynero.wordpress.com, and you can find
to me it was almost the taster for a trade I'd want to read. I'm gonna put my hand out there and say there's a lot in it, and there's something that happens towards the end that makes the rest almost coherent. I don't know whether that's how you felt about it, because it starts on with a lot of scene setting, doesn't it? Really, real heavy scene setting. So you get that nostalgia of the period he's talking about. And then there's a romance, isn't there? There's a sort of romance that happens that plays on that nostalgia. And especially on the cover, you can see there's like a Rubik's Cube, and is it a DeLorean? No, it's a Lotus, isn't it, from the Bond movies, on the cover and that sort of thing.
Because the two characters introduced to each other when they're children, and then they sort of reconnect when they're adults, and them embracing brings back the memories of this time. It's well illustrated the way he does the kind of reminiscing.
It's a great cover.
Back.
Great first issue cover, definitely. And then something happens, and I reviewed this or previewed it, I think, for Never On Anything, and I was careful not to reveal what happens, but something happens that takes it in another direction.
Yeah,
that will be explored more, I think.
When we sort of talk about, we say about the first issue of comics, this feels like the first part of a story, not the first issue of a comic. It feels like a larger story has been broken down into to sections.
It does, really does, mate. Right. Yeah, make you right. That certainly. Yeah. Agree with that. Yeah.
So I think reading the collection of this, maybe you'd get a better understanding of it in its entirety, as opposed to reading it issue at a time. I don't know. I could be wrong, but that's just what I'm getting for it.
I definitely want to see where it goes. Very
interesting. Yeah, and in no way knocking it at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah, quite the opposite. Yeah. I want to see what happens. And I think we can play with structure like that, can't we? We can. We're in comics. We can do, especially when you're doing creator-owned comics. You can play with the structure. You can you can build that setting, which yeah. he does really well. It evokes the period. You get like they suffer a burglary, don't you? And you feel yeah. you feel the impact on the kid.
The violation, the
Yeah, and then suddenly this other thing happens, and you wonder what that means, and then you think, oh, issue two. And you can do that in comics. You know, it's not something, you know, if you did that in a TV series, everyone would be going, oh, my God, what's happening? I've got to wait a week. But no, comics allows you to do that because it's your medium, isn't it? You know?
There's almost a bit of a fourth wall breaking as well when you're reading along with the story and then it comes out with a character illustrating his past in the comic.
Yeah.
So there's some nice touches. I'd recommend checking it out.
Yeah, cool.
Nice.
Nice one.
Speaking about stories that you could only do in comic format, because apart from animation at its finest, I can't see how on earth anyone would do this story otherwise. My pick for the week is a Tomahawk, issue zero.
Oh, mate, I so need to get this. This is, you know, this is up my street as well. I'm so glad you picked this. I want to hear about this. Yeah.
It's written by Donny Cates, art by Ian Biederman. I hope I said that right. Letters by Taylor Esposito. John J. Hill did the design and the logo, so that's the second time that the designer of the logo has been got a shout-out this week, which is well-deserved because the logo is amazing. This is a collection of a tale originally serialised in Heavy Metal magazine, which I didn't
know. Oh, was it? I didn't realise that. Oh, yeah. It must have been under
Under
Grant Morrison's editorship then, I would think. It's got that feel about it,
Yeah, and it's fitting that it's in there because of the comic's content. And Mr. Morrison himself said this about it. And you can tell this is a Grant Morrison quote. It's a screaming black hole feedback squall of death metal Kirby cosmic energy spinning straight towards your prefrontal cortex.
What the fuck does that mean? Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I get him completely on that. That's because I've looked through it and I want the physical copy though. It's oversized, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And I definitely want to get. I'm going to double dip on this, but basically, this is the story of the Cyberzerker and his mightier Tomahawk, which is a powerful weapon. And this I'm trying to think of how to say this. It's like Jack Kirby doing his version of Conan as he was listening to nothing but the likes of Dream Theater and Led Zeppelin.
With a little bit of early turtle style art as well.
Yes,
that sort of scratchy. It's not quite as polished as Kirby, is it? You know, it's got that.
Yeah, there's some matter into this book, which makes me think that the artist has a background in another sort of art form, which is tattoos, because there's back matter in it, which has pictures of people who have got like characters and bits of artwork from the comic tattooed on themselves. And the artwork is very sort of similar to that sort of, you know, especially with the colours and the textures and things going on. But it's a beautiful book. This is untold in its epic scope and bombast. I love that I get to use the word bombast because this book is just crazy. This is the most metal thing I've read in every sense of the word. As I read it, I could almost hear the sort of kinds of chords that would be played, as the main character, the Cyberzerker. He absolutely cleaves his enemies in two with the Atomahawk, which is just the best name ever. I love a play on words, it's like a laser axe, and it's a weapon that's so powerful that just everyone absolutely fears it, and they're saying it's sort of a godly weapon that should never be used. You have to see this book for yourself. And it's basically the Cyberzerker just going around absolutely mashing up people. Like, it's in three chapters because this is issue zero and they're going to be doing more stories, I believe. And this is the collection.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. They're going to be doing more going forward. But Image Comics has collected it all with some, you know, the tattoo pages and stuff. And putting it.
I suppose you can only get DMT or the special form of mushrooms that they must have been taking every so often. You can't take them all the time, can you?
No, you can't. It'd probably kill you. Donny Cates, he's tearing up the comic book world, and he has done over the past couple of years. I've yet to sample any of his Marvel work, because I know he's been doing like Doctor Strange and...
Thanos stuff's great, mate.
Of the titles I really want. And like, he can... He's got such a, you know, he can seemingly write anything. Because, like, Baby Teeth, which is one of my favourite titles that I always talk about, obviously he created that one, and that's a very sort of modern tale. But the stuff he does in Atomahawk is definitely someone that just has just taken the seatbelt off, has put his foot on the gas, and is properly going for it. Here's some of the dialogue, right? There's a character that gets his head chopped off, and he's not dead. You know, the character isn't dead, but and it's basically a lot of it's told from narration from the berserker himself. So he's sort of doing that wonderful sort of Conan over the top narration. And like one of them is a tomahawk and I become one. I tell it of the approaching horde of the coming threat. The creature's head says a prayer. Oh, fuck. A tomahawk laughs. It is terrifying. It's just absolutely. It's just the most wonderful sort of nonsense. Like it starts.
All right,
off...
so come on then. Give us a playlist. Give us what you'd listen to. When
oh,
you're...
dude, I can't.
Go on.
Do you know what? I'll have to. Maybe I'll put it on the Facebook page. I'll have a think about that, and I'll put it on the Awesome Comics Talk, and I'll put my little playlist for a tomahawk. I mean,
that's
I think...
not a bad shout for a post as well. What you listen, you're reading a comic, specify the comic and what song you hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great little fun thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for this comic, it goes along at such a pace that one prog metal song, and you could probably, because they go on for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah.
But I just love, like, another bit of narration is bone separates against blade, and my enemies scream their dying songs to my imprisoned god. Their songs are too brief. My god will be displeased. It's like, I was reading it thinking,
yeah.
Yes. It's just amazing, and you know, it's at that point I just think Donny Cates is having fun with this, and the whole creative team's having fun with it. And I've got to say, full props to Biederman, because the artwork is a thing of absolute beauty. I can sort of say that I haven't really seen anything like it. But every page could be framed and hung.
It's got a real underground feel to it. It really has.
Yeah. I mean, I read it on a guided view, but then when I zoomed out, I thought, oh my God, look at what he's done with the panels and the way that sort of pages move.
I really regret not buying this. I saw this on the shelf
Has it come out recently? Because on Comixology, it said October
2017.
Yeah, October 2017. So, yeah, I definitely need to get it. I saw this because Donny Cates retweeted it to someone. Someone was talking about something, and he said, oh, here's a book that, you know, myself and these creators did, and I looked at it and I suddenly thought, I need it. I immediately went to Comixology, found it, bought it, read it, and that was it. It was as simple as that. And of course, because it's a collection, you've got the pages of back matter, which is like I say, it's got the tattoos, which is just fascinating in itself. You know, definitely the people that read this story have bought into the vibe of it and loved it. And it's kind of like the story itself. It's almost like the interior artwork for an album that never existed. Do you know what I mean? But the sort of artwork that you just pore over. Full props to Esposito on the letters. I know he's done a lot of stuff, I think. Is it Aftershock? He does a lot of stuff for them, I think, as well. He's another one to watch out for.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
So in this book, it's got everything that a growing child needs. It's got moments of carnage. There's beauty. There's over-the-top bombast. I'll say that word again.
You like that,
and,
mate.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, and this is going to make me sound quite intelligent here. Well, no, it won't. But
might do.
Some of the layouts kind of reminded me of the kind of stuff you see in the Bayonne Tapestry.
Oh, okay.
Do you see where I'm coming from, Tony? Like, he's laid it out. You know, you have those long, you know, when they used to do in medieval times, they were telling this story over a long sort of section of fabric.
Yeah.
And there's definitely the layout of the pages are very much like that, and sort of.
I've just bought it actually. Yeah.
Oh, good man. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's saying it's a series. It's saying subscribe instantly. It's a series.
I think there's more in the pipeline. I don't know whether Image will do that, or whether it must be Image have probably picked it up, and Donny Cates is doing it with Image now. Maybe. Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see Donny Cates is at Nice in?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I'm at Nice this year. That's gonna be good. Yeah.
Oh. I might have to become a stalker. No, not really, Donny. Yeah. Not that you listen.
That's just up the road for me, mate. You should come to that.
Oh,
you should both. Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's the date of Nice this year?
First of September, isn't it?
I think you're right. Yeah, I think so.
First and second. I've never been to Nice, so I'm planning on going this year.
It's usually a lot of names. They do well for like big guests, you know, in the room. But the I'm going to say, I'm just thinking of a song that I would play to this. It'd probably be Yellow by Coldplay, I'm going to say.
I'd do Yellow Submarine.
I see what you mean about the Bayeux Tapestry, mate. Completely. I'm just looking at it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, that's crazy. That first page is clearly that. That's got to be an input.
You have that. And, like, for instance, there's panels of the Cyberzerker. He's cleaving someone in half, like, with, like, a laser axe. And in his other hand, he's got, like, the head of one of his enemies that he's using that is attached to a cybernetic snake holding it. He's using it like a whip. That's the kind of craziness you're dealing with in this comic. It's creativity at its finest. So if you like Metallic Cyber Knights and virtual reality mixed with Slain, it's right up your street. Yeah, and it's a head trip. And I'm, like I say, I'm going to buy it in print format if I can get my hands on it. So look for it on Comixology. Yeah, if you find it on your shelves in your local comic book
store, it's like £3.40 on Comixology, something like that. I think I paid.
Yeah, it's well worth it because it's like 40 to 50 pages, I think.
And
you'll burn through it. It's brilliant. I loved it.
Cool.
I want more. So there you go. That's my one. So our second Dan Mallier, what would you like to recommend?
Yeah.
Have you guys read the trade of Big Trouble in Little China versus Escape from New York?
Yes, I have. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I picked that up from Reggie at Destination Venus a few months ago, and it's absolutely fantastic.
I felt strangely aroused by the female snake. Bliskin.
And I think it was, didn't John Carpenter, didn't he give it the seal of approval as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he has with a couple of those series. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really works, doesn't it? It really does.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, if everybody hasn't read it, you've kind of got this parallel universe where Jack Burton is Snake Plissken, but in a different universe, and they're kind of, somebody's trying to wipe out all of the Snake Plissken, so you end up with Plissken and Jack Burton together in a kind of mashup, and
I don't necessarily go for tie-ins of movies, you know, that's not really my bag, but looking at like the way that they've done this book and the artwork as well, this is one I really need to get my hands on and read.
It's really fun and colourful.
Yeah, he really gets the interplay between the two characters. It's just perfect as well, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
So that's just great. Great fun comic. It's like, it's really bright and colourful and that as well. It's just a really, really good, really good. I think it was by Boom, wasn't it? Who published it?
I think it was. Yeah, and there's that character with the guitar. Who's the? It's a while since I've read it.
I'm trying to think who that is. I know what you mean. I just can't think who he is.
Yeah. No, very good. Yeah, I like all those ones. I have to say, the Big Trouble one went a bit strange for a while, but they're back on track again. Yeah, good.
No, it was a cover that drew me into it because it's just nice and bright, colourful, and I thought, oh, bloody hell, you can't beat a Snake Plissken and Jack Burton crossover. So I didn't actually know anything about it, and it was just a complete impulse buy in when I went to see Reggie, and absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved that comic.
Oh, cool. Nice one.
Amazing.
Yeah. I never drive faster than I can see.
Yeah, everything else in the reflexes. Yeah, it took crackerjack timing.
I knew you were going to use that one. I love that one.
I use that one at work all the time. Yeah.
I use Born Ready all the time.
All the time.
so good. Right, there you go. Have you got another one, Dan?
I have got one. I'll just give it a quick shout out. Descender. By Jeff Lemire and Justin Nugent. Yeah, absolutely.
I've got it. I haven't read it yet. It's on my to read pile.
Okay.
No, I've been getting through. I'm three trades in now, and I've just ordered 4 and 5. I ordered those yesterday.
Oh, nice.
And it's just great, real good story. You basically got the humans have been attacked by this mysterious robots, and literally wiped a load of people out. So any robots then have been outlawed. And there's this young, like, robot boy, and I won't go too much into it because it's just, you know, you read it for yourselves kind of thing, but you've kind of got bounty hunters tracking down this young robot boy and things like that. And the artwork by, I think, is it Dustin? Is it Nugent? I'm trying to think how you pronounce his surname.
I bought the book based on, like, I know nothing about the story. It's one of those ones where I'm looking forward to not know, you know.
Yeah.
I looked at it. It's beautiful, designed wonderful. I picked it up at London Super Comic Con. I still haven't got around to reading it. But yeah, it sounds great.
No, it is. It's absolutely great. It's probably, you know, the kind of Escape from New York is kind of a fun comic to read. But Descender has been the best comic I've read for a long time.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Wow. Nice. So what an amazing selection of books that our audience has got this week.
Yeah.
God help me when I'm doing the show notes. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this week's show. I hope to see you at Leamington Comic Con, hopefully in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
And since you missed Mr. Wagner, then come along and see the interview that we're doing with him.
Yes.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yes. Yeah.
Pick up a copy of Rock of the Reds.
Devo. Yes. Yeah,
definitely check it out. Yeah, because it's well worth your time. So, yeah, there's several different ways you can get in touch with us to let us know what you thought of this show, what you want for upcoming shows, etc. You can, and we've had some lovely emails recently. Thank you to anyone that gets in touch with us.
Yeah,
you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any books you want to send us. If you've got any letters for the Awesome Comic issue 2, I had to think about that then. I've never said Awesome Comics so much in my life ever since I started this bloody podcast. But awesome used to be my favourite word. Now
that's why you called it that. I remember that email from you. Let's call it awesome because I like that word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually try not to use it as much now because I use it all the fucking time.
Yeah, it is a fantastic word, though, isn't it?
Let's
face it. Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. And and if you want to get a letter in Awesome Comics issue 2, send it to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Like us, follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be posting up whoever will be on the next show. We can make it. We've got some exciting guests and things coming up soon.
Yeah.
About. So
somebody, some little hint, Roy the Rovers. That's a little hint about a future guest as well.
Yeah. And now stay tuned to the Twitter. We didn't do it last week, basically because I was so busy at work. But Thursday is our hashtag Kickstarter call out. So if you want us to retweet any of your Kickstarters, of which there's a few about, then contact us on Twitter @theawesomepod, and we will retweet it and get it out to whoever we can. So there you go. Now on Facebook, on the Book of Faces, you can like us on facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast and join the group where all the best stuff happens, all the greatest chat. Some of it hilarious, some of it thought-provoking, some of it about the process, and also Dan's Avengers Infinity mashup. So get involved in that. Yeah.
There's a few squares left.
And that's just us.
And there's a little thing about what you're reading over Easter. There's been loads of people putting in some great recommendations.
Oh, yeah, and I need to do that, actually, because I've been reading quite a lot. So search for Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook, and you'll find us there. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes or wherever, if you get a chance to leave us a review, then please do. It helps get the word out. Likewise, tell anyone you can about us, because we want we want everyone to read even more comics. And if you thank you if you listen to us on the Stitcher network, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod York Sex Hotel.
For some reason I had Tom York pop into my head then, you know, the lead singer of Radiohead.
On a sex swing in a hotel.
Yeah, that's not an image I need.
Could happen.
I was my fallback one was Pod Chopper. And it was meant to be like a double entendre, but also a little call out to John's character from 2000 AD.
Oh, nice. Love the callbacks. Love the callbacks.
Yeah.
Now, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
neveriron.anything.blogspot.co.uk. There's a couple of things going up this week. Or @SOHYZ. There you go.
Nice. Dan?
I'm on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard @VanguardComic.com.
Nice. You can follow me on Twitter @JesterDiablo. You can find out more about my comic @TheRedMaskFromMars.com. And thank you again for joining us this week, Dan.
Cheers, Dan.
Thank you for having us on. Apologies for the not having John with me. I'm sure you'd rather have John talking about 2000 AD than listening to me, but there we go.
No, don't be silly.
I'm sure we'll get in on again.
I'll listen to you anytime, Dan. Although we'll probably have to delete the other audio, like I said, before we start. but where can people find you and Leamington online?
Check us out at Lem Comic Con on Twitter and on Facebook, which is just Leamington Comic Con. And can I just say as well, you know, if you are an exhibitor or a guest attending the show, please, you know, in the build up to the show, just tell people that you're going. And then it isn't just me kind of shouting at my followers and peeing everybody off. You know, we all kind of talk, you know, we've all debated, you know, comic shows, you know, being overrun by TV and media shows and stuff like that. So, you know, if you are coming, it's really important, you know, that we all share and promote the comic focus shows, you know, because we can meet, we can reach more people and more people become aware of the show, more people through the door. Yeah. And it keep the indie shows alive because, you know, we need all the help we can get at the moment.
I often quote you from when you're on before, Dan, is you, where you say that the like button and the retweet button are so close. Go on, just move over that half an inch. Press the other one.
It's really important because, you know, we don't want to be kind of constantly spamming people's timelines. You know, so if people are talking, you know, and sharing it, you know, we've got people like Al Ewing and people like that have been absolutely great. You know, tweeting about the show, the Etherington brothers blogging about it, and things like that. That's really kind of what we need.
There you go, folks. Expect to see Twitter light up with Leamington Comic Con over the next couple of weeks. So, and thank you for joining us again, Dan. Now,
thank you, guys.
And thank you all, lovely lot, for listening. Hope you've had a great Easter, of course. Unless you're listening to this like 2 months down the line, then what is time? It is merely a concept. So, thanks for listening. And from Guns, Tony, Dan and myself, have a brilliant week. Why don't you start on that to read pile? You know, let's all try and do one book a week from our to read pile.
I promise to read Arian, Lord of Atlantis from 1984.
If that's a real book that's there, Tony, then
yeah, I bought that in 1984. I still haven't read the last few issues.
Do you know what? I want to hear a review at Leamington Comic Con from you.
Okay.
On that.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I'll do a live performance of the last issue for you.
Oh my God, that is something to look forward to, isn't it? That's why you've got to be there. That's why you've got to be there, folks. So have a brilliant week, read loads of comics, and as always, stay awesome. See you later, guys.
See ya.